I believe since Darren is back, we're good to go.
Not quite. Hang on.
God damn it.
I am trying to hurry. I figured the better I get this done now than...
I always thought that you were the one with the mixer.
I'm doing a kind of mixing.
Wiki.
Oh.
Are you mixing drinks?
Yeah, it's like...
No, actually, I'm...
Wait, what?
I was cleaning out quickly and refilling my vaporizer.
There you go.
I can't believe 50% of this podcast is vaping.
I'm afraid it's 75%. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, I was about to close Skype and be like, I'm not going to Portland.
Hello, and welcome to the Scotchcast for the end of the year of 2013-14.
Or is it the beginning of the year?
In the beginning of 2015, because we here at the Scotchcast like to do our Game of the Year podcast after the year has ended, so we get all the games that were released. And we certainly aren't just lazy and slackers.
Was waiting for the Steam sale or any of that.
Yes. To my left is one Matt Leslie, also known as Shinboy, 630. Hello.
Wait. Well, to the left? Hold on. Right. That's only if you're facing south.
That's only if you're a Beyonce song to the left. From what I'm
looking at my screen, he's to your right.
He is to the right.
I was going to put in some sound file, a little fire going, sort of like a fireside chat as we have this discussion. Screw it, I'm done now. What up? It's on the internet. There's not even a real table. I'm just standing here. Durin's here, so Squiddle. What's up, guys?
Hi. What's up?
We're not actually real people. This is all just...
We're going to list a bunch of games we played this year. Oh,
I have a collective question.
Okay.
Do I want to buy this t-shirt that is the Foxhound logo, but it's the wolf from Okami with a paintbrush in her mouth?
Do you even have to ask that question?
That's
pretty good.
Okay, you could either get that, or there is a play on Winter is Coming that is the Okami hound, and it doesn't say Winter is Coming, but it says something like, it's good. You have two choices.
Well, you really sold me on that one.
I've been looking at a lot of Metal Gear clothes lately, and I can't really explain why.
We're going to talk about games that came out this year that we enjoy playing. We're going to start off with Durin, and then go to each other person in a nice little format. Also, apologies before we get fully start this train as we're gaining speed. Apologies, anybody who listened to the episode where I just completely didn't edit the break.
You could republish it, couldn't you? I mean, if you wanted to.
I could, but I was thinking, man, I feel like crap today. I didn't make any notes that there was a break, so there probably isn't one.
Well, you were.
So wait, is there just like blank noise for 20 minutes or something?
Folks who listen know what's up with it.
Okay.
Is there a really bad conversation where you're talking about?
I was going to say, as long as there's not like,
I don't think
there's racial slurs thrown or anything, I imagine it's probably
no, bad. I edit all those out.
Okay, good.
Okay, good. Because there were some Brits on the show, as I understand, and they're loose with the swear words, the cussing.
Yes.
A good old pure American
English. They ain't no Aussies.
Some chaps from across the pond. Anyway, Durin, you got 10 games on this list in this Google Doc.
Let's hear them.
Tell me about some of them.
First, I'd like to start off with this. This was a weird fucking year. This is the first year, I think, at least since we've been doing this, if not even before, that like I had a hard time even like getting the like wanting to make a top 10 list, because there wasn't a whole lot of great stuff released this year.
I just made mine up 10 minutes ago,
as we'll see from my number 10, which is Smite, the free to play third person behind the back MOBA.
Brad Shoemaker will tell you that free to play does not necessarily make it a bad,
No. And that's the thing. Like, one of the reasons this made it on my list is I actually, I've wanted to get into MOBAs here and there, but I just, I don't have the time commitment to do the 100 plus hours of training and reading in Dota 2 before you can actually start playing the game. So Smite, Mr. Walks from the Giant Bomb Gaming PC Gaming Hub. Kind of got me started in this early on in the year, and it's just for somebody who has like an MMO background, which God knows I do, it's much easier to just kind of pick up and play. It plays a lot more like an MMO. It's from that kind of perspective. Anybody who has played kind of the action MMOs like Terra or Wildstar, it you know, maybe not Wildstar. But anyway, like,
tell me on a game. Tell me it's like Wildstar.
No, when I say like Terra, for instance, it's kind of the like mouse controls your aim, but yeah, behind that third person view. But it's really simple to understand, and unlike Dota and League, the community is not completely fucking toxic. Like, I've rarely had people yell at other people, and generally when they did, they deserved it because they were like AFK for half the match.
Well, and how old is Smite? How long has it been like in open beta playable form?
In open, oh god,
loose form. You don't have to be exact. Like a couple of years, like couple 3 months,
3 years, right?
Yeah, I was going to say well over a year for sure. Okay. It's something I've been playing for quite a while, off and on. I played the most of it this year, though, and it's something that like I played enough of it that I decided, as a free to play game that you totally don't need to put money into, I decided to go ahead and buy their like all the gods pack for like $35, because I get for that $35 you get all of the gods that are currently released and all of the ones they release after the fact. So like from here on out, I will have every character. I still only really play the same one, but it's nice to have those options, and it's, you know, it's something I put enough time into that I can feel good about giving them some money and supporting the game. So that's number 10, which is super weird because I did not think that would ever make a top 10 list. It's a good game. It's not terrible, but I really thought there would be better games released this year.
It's weird because like. This year, it seems like there are like way more good games than there have been in a while, but just not nearly as many. Like, this is a, you know, all time great, or at least a without a doubt fantastic game.
Yeah, like there is no The Last of Us this year. There is no Red Dead Redemption.
I mean, I would argue that The Last of Us is only a good game, but that's another argument entirely.
I think like the best way to put it is typically for a lot of people's like games of the year. They usually like at least a couple of those, like that list, if not the majority of it, is spotted with AAA titles. But the AAA titles have been somewhat disappointing. Like, you know, a lot of people didn't get behind Destiny or Halo Chief.
Yeah, it seems like this year, pretty much all of the good games came with a caveat of some sort, even if they were good games.
Yeah, definitely. And any of them that are on my list, I will definitely point that out as well.
Which, like, inversely, and I think we'll see this a lot with Squiddles as well, and then I'll let Durin get the floor, but I think this has been a pretty good year for mobile games. Like, there's been... I like the silence. There's been a lot of decent games...
I was taking a drink, I'm sorry.
...that came out on Crossroads iOS was good, and Android.
But, I will say an honorable mention for a mobile game that I didn't play, but really, really, really wanted to, and still plan on playing, is 80 Days. That game sounds super fucking interesting. And like,
I bought it the other day, yeah.
See, I kept hearing them talk about it on Idle Thumbs and just like gushing over that game, and it sounded amazing. I just never got around to buying it, partly because I don't tend to buy mobile games, so it just kind of immediately like leaves my mind after the podcast is over. But it sounds really interesting, and it probably would have made my list if I'd actually gotten around to playing it. So I wanted to at least mention that game. But number 9 on the list is Mario Kart 8. Probably one of the best console games I've played this year. It's definitely the best Mario Kart I've played ever.
I think you can make the argument that it is the best Mario Kart.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm trying to hear that argument. Mario Kart 7 was good. This kind of builds on everything 7 did.
I didn't like 7.
Double Dash was good.
Double Dash was good.
For at the time, but like for where I, you know, back then I, you know, would play it with friends and it was great. Double Dash is terrible solo, so
yeah. Oh, yeah.
The last Mario Kart I remember playing, I think it was on the 64.
That's
not a great Mario Kart.
It could be said that Double Dash was a good game. Like, it is a good game. It may not be a good Mario Kart. Like, a lot of people would argue, like, oh, it doesn't play like a Mario Kart. Well, it still is a really good game.
Double Dash is really fun if you have, like, 4 people there to play.
Oh, yeah.
You're, like, 2v2 split screen, and it's great. Oh, yeah. It's so much fun. But, it's one of those games that kind of requires that to really, like, have the best experience with it. I mean, it's like, you know, the Zelda Four Swords Adventure. Like, sure, you can play that solo if you wanted to.
Why would you want to?
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, Mario Kart 8 is great. The online is nearly flawless from what I've played of it. I want to play some more of it. I want to get back into the game partly to justify going and buying the DLC because I really want to see how Link plays. And
Link plays all right. And but that Hyrule Castle track is pretty good.
Okay. What about the F-Zero? Is that one?
I only played that once.
Okay. Yeah, solid game. Number 8. I really thought this one was going to be higher on my list, but it hasn't grabbed me like I hoped it would, and that's Dragon Age Inquisition. Oddly enough, it could be that I'm not far enough into the game. I think once I hit stuff that really starts involving the companions, maybe it'll pick up from there. But so far from what I've played of it, I almost feel like the story of 2 was more engaging than this one so far.
I didn't play most of 2, but the main story is not why I'm here, except there is one quest later on that is, like, very much a classic RPG. Like, there's next to no combat, and you have to go around investigating for 2 hours quest, mm-hmm. which I think is great.
That sounds fun.
The setting's great. All the interactions are great. The characters that are in that scene that are not, like, your companions and stuff are all great. Mm. Anyone who's played the game will know exactly what I'm talking about. Picks up from there.
I think it's just that maybe you haven't gotten far enough into it to really see where the game gets good, but at the same time I'm like 20 plus hours in already, so I feel like it should have grabbed me by now. And it didn't.
Well, hold on. Are we going to do spoilers on this? I feel like we have to. It's not a very major
one. Yeah, I mean, like, that.
Yeah, there's no need to talk about endings of games, but yeah, I mean...
Yeah, okay, because if you have heard mention of, like, a party or a ball that you need to go to, that's the quest that I'm talking about.
I think that might be the next quest I need to
go to. It's basically just, like, you're going to this thing. It's basically you're going to this thing because you hear there's going to be an attempt on the Empress's life. Mm-hmm. And you're pretty much there trying to solve that in the middle of this party while also keeping up appearances and all of your political nonsense that you need to do.
So you're basically playing like a James Bond episode or something?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay. Or like True Lies.
Yes, it is a True Lies, exactly.
I'll put it this way, for from here on out, listener, I will try and write down or jot down all of the games that we plan to do spoilers on. And I will just make sure those are in the show notes. If there's at any point, like you just check your, you know, whatever, however you're listening to this, check the show notes. And if there's a game on that list that you are worried about, don't listen.
Yeah, but it's basically like you need to go around and gain favor of certain people that if you accuse someone that you have people backing you up and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah. Like I said, I've heard it gets really interesting, especially once you start doing like the companion missions and stuff.
The companion missions from BioWare are always the best parts of those games.
Yeah,
even like Mass Effect.
But I mean, the combat has been okay at best.
It's okay. Yeah,
I don't like their implementation of the open world as much. It feels very. I get this kind of feeling like I get with a lot of MMOs where like I finish a zone and it feels good to accomplish something, and then you get dumped into a whole new zone. It's like, all right, do it again.
That's why I haven't bothered clearing zones.
Yeah, so
I don't
hate it. So I'm going to keep playing it. But it's just I expected that to be like, if not number one, at least fighting for it, and it's number 8. So not quite as good as I was hoping for. Number 7 was Dreamfall Chapters. I've been a fan of the Dreamfall series for fucking years, and fuck them for waiting this long to finally make it another game after the cliffhanger in Dreamfall Longest Journey. But they made a good one, at least, so far. I haven't finished it yet, but so far it's actually been really interesting, and they waste no time. Like, the game picks up where the last one left off, and they go places very quickly, and they tie some things up very quickly and almost kind of abruptly, but they're not afraid to. I'm trying to talk around it because there's no reason to spoil what I'm talking about. But they do some interesting things with characters early on.
If I can help, because I know on Mumble, Albino Jerk was playing it, and he I was just sort of in Mumble when he was playing it, and he started it. Maybe like an hour and a half later, he was just like, a lot of things just happened all at once very quickly.
Yes, like basically in the intro. but like, you know, within the first couple of hours of playing the game, you have already seen what has happened, or, you know, what's going on with three of the major characters. And I think they are the three major playable characters in the series. So like they're very quick to kind of, you know, check in on everybody. And obviously the main story is focused on Zoe from the last Dreamfall game. But yeah, no, it's actually really interesting. And Giant Bomb, as I said before the recording, did a good job picking Shitbot for one of the best characters of 2014, because he is great.
So not playing The Longest Journey prior to this, am I going to miss out on a lot of stuff when I start playing it? Because I have
there were two games prior to this. There was The Longest Journey, and then there was Dreamfall, The Longest Journey.
Okay, so not playing either of those games, but knowing about them, am I going to miss out on a lot when I start playing it?
Because I would at least recommend reading some wikis.
The first game just came out on iOS in November.
Oh, there we go.
I have not played the first game. I actually didn't know it existed when I played Dreamfall. But that didn't seem quite as necessary. But jumping in at this point, for a lot of that intro to make any sense at all, you need to know who those characters are.
Okay.
And kind of why they are where they are. So I would definitely at least recommend... I'd recommend at least watching a wiki or reading a wiki. I would say maybe if you can get a hold of it, maybe play Dreamfall: The Longest Journey first, because it does a good job of like it was made years and years after the, or it seems like years and years after the original Longest Journey game was made. So they do a decent job of like introducing, like, it's a whole new character you're playing as from compared to the first one. And they kind of, you get an idea of maybe what happened in the first game by playing through Dreamfall. This game, from what I've played so far, just totally assumes you are a fan of the series if you're playing this, and so you have played those other games.
Well, poop. All right, I guess I got something I got to do this year now.
Yay!
But I mean, I will say that, you know, combat aside, because combat was fucking terrible in Dreamfall. It was actually a really good game. So it's definitely worth going back and playing.
I think they're both. I think Dreamfall, the first one, is on Steam.
Yeah, they're both on Steam.
Yeah, I was gonna pick it up.
But this one doesn't seem to have combat in it so far. I heard they might have pulled that out in this game, which is good because they aren't good at doing it. So, yeah, it's totally worth playing. Awesome game. I'm worried at this point now because the whole thing with this one was they made the last game and then were going to make another one and then didn't. And then they're developed, like, they basically became an MMO factory. And the only way they made this one was by, like, the main guy leaving the company, getting the rights from the company to make this, and then making it. And so now the fact that they've turned it into, like, an episodic thing has me just completely worried that it's just going to fall apart again before they finish the story. So hopefully that doesn't happen.
So quick side note for you, Duren, or question, I guess. Did you ever play the Journeyman projects?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Okay. All right. We'll skip that then. Okay.
Okay. Next game, number 6, Bayonetta 2. Kind of an example of how weird this year was, because I have played that game up to chapter 2, and it's already made more of an impact than other games I've spent many, many more hours on.
Well, the thing is, that first chapter is really good.
Yeah, that first chapter is nuts. Like, it's weird, though, because like chapter 2 very, very much slows way the hell down comparatively.
But not for long.
But yeah, I'll be interested to see what happens after this. That game is fucking weird, and it's awesome that like they packed it in with the original game. So when I get done with this crazy shit, I can just go back and play that one too.
See, I bought it on the eShop, and it does not come with a code.
Really?
But what it said on the eShop page that it applies a discount to the first Bayonetta.
So maybe if you go to buy that, it'll just show it at $0 or something.
Maybe, because how much is it? Is it $60?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Bayonetta 2 on the eShop is $50. So I'm thinking it might make the first Bayonetta $10.
Oh, okay. See, I thought the physical version was just going to come with a download code for the first game. So I was actually...
I thought it did.
No, it actually is a physical disc.
Huh, I thought it was...
It's good, because it's the Wii U.
I thought it came with the physical disc for the second game and then a download code for the first game. I didn't think they printed discs of that.
No, yeah, it's a two disc.
Weird.
Set. Yeah, I was really surprised when I opened that up. But yeah, no, that's a crazy weird game. And I read your list, Shinboy, and you pretty much hit it on the nail. Like, it's awesome because it's a game that's not afraid to just be a fucking game.
Yep.
Like, it does not take itself seriously whatsoever. It's just there to have fun.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
Number five is Smash Brothers, because it's Smash Brothers. The only reason that is not higher on the list is because they completely fucked the online.
It's, I don't know if that's necessarily true, because it's not like it was there to begin with.
It's damn near unplayable.
And my point is, they didn't screw anything up. It's not like it was...
Well, no, but what I mean is like...
Okay, just before we get too far into this, which Smash Brothers?
Ah, yes.
Smash Brothers. Two came out this year.
Super Smash Brothers for the Wii U.
Okay, so not 3DS.
God, no. That thing is a fucking atrocity. No, the you can't release a fighter in 2014 and not have functional online. Like, there were times where I was playing with
Dive Kick
before. I was playing 1v1 with a friend who lives in the same city as me, and there were times we had to just go to opposite sides of the map and wait out the lag. It was that bad. Like, we're on the same ISP in the same city, and it couldn't do it. So, because I'd heard, like, you know, distance could have problems with it and whatever. Like, no, we're miles from each other. So I did hear they said that they are done balancing characters and are going to focus on the online part of the game. So maybe it'll get better, but it's Nintendo, so I kind of doubt it. But online aside, it is an awesome game. When you have some friends over, or even just playing by yourself against AI through all their different modes. The nice part about it is because it offers, you know, 72 different ways to play the game controller-wise. You pretty much always will have at least a couple controllers laying around somewhere that are compatible with this game. It's only 72 because the other, you know, to get it up to 100, you would have to find one of those adapters, and good luck.
The GameSpot selling them, but only as an $80 bundle with two more controllers.
So did they really? Just
make, scummiest thing of all time.
Did they only make a limited version, a limited amount of those? I mean, was it like a...
Yeah.
Why would they do that? Just to be assholes?
Because Nintendo?
Yeah. Okay.
Although, yeah. Admittedly, with GameStop, it's not as bad as when they got new copies of Xenoblade and opened them and sold them as used so they could sell them for more than $60.
Jesus. Oh, yeah. I remember that.
But, I mean, also, I think there are third-party manufacturers of those controllers.
Yes, but there are not, to my knowledge, third-party ones. Because, like, there are third-party, like, USB GameCube things, so you can use it on a PC or whatever. But I don't think people make them where it's, like, four across like the Nintendo one is. At least not that I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I guess wait it out. A few months from now, that'll probably be available. I think it's super weird that, like, it only works with this game. Like, why can't you just make it work with other games, too? Like,
it works with Dolphin on the PC.
Well, I mean, like, you know, why can't they make it so that, you know, that for the new Zelda that comes out this year? Like, obviously, it's not going to work for... They're not going to put in the effort to go and make it retroactively work for every game they've released thus far. But why not make it work for, you know, Star Fox and Zelda and other stuff that comes out later on?
Well, because you'd have to make it so you could use a 64 controller, because that's the best controller for Zelda or Star Fox.
Oh, Jesus.
So, I've said many times that Nintendo has never made a good controller. As of now that I own a Wii U, Nintendo has made one good controller, and it is the Pro Controller.
Okay, yep. Cool.
Yep, the Wii U Pro Controller is great.
Yep.
I don't really feel much of a desire to go and buy that adapter thing because I have the Pro Controller. The only thing I've noticed, and it's super weird, but when playing Smash Brothers on the Wii U with the Wii U Pro Controller, occasionally I will go to hit the C-stick on the GameCube controller and end up hitting buttons instead. Because the analog stick is not where the C-stick was on the GameCube controller. So, like, my mind actually is thinking I'm using a GameCube controller and goes to move my thumb down to flick the stick, and instead I end up hitting, like, the X button or something.
See, that's why you don't play Super Smash Brothers. It solves all these problems.
Did they make a Pro Controller for the Wii?
Yes.
Okay, is it the same one? Might have been
called something else.
No, it was called the Pro Controller. It required being plugged into the Wii remote though, so it wasn't properly wireless.
It's also kind of bad.
You had to like take the Wii Pro Controller, plug it in where the nunchuck would go.
Oh God, no.
And just kind of daisy chain it off of that. So you'd have like this Wii controller kind of hanging off the side.
Sure, no, wait. It's called the Classic Controller. That's what it's called.
Well, that's right. There was a Classic Controller and then there was a Classic Pro Controller.
You're thinking of like, it's sort of like.
The Classic Controller was the one that looked kind of like an NES or
like a Super Nintendo.
Like it was like kind of that flat, like biscuit shape or whatever.
Yeah.
There was also the Wii Classic Pro Controller.
Oh, you're right.
It had the proper grips and everything on it. And,
right. Yeah. Oh, that's an ugly controller.
Somehow I imagine you having to balance the remote on your head so the IR would connect while you're using the controller to play a game and using your head to move something.
No, instead you're like sitting there with a controller in your lap and this like cord running from it over off to this kind of discarded Wii controller off to the side. There's just kind of like this, like it's sort of like this discarded dumpster baby off just sitting next to you. Just kind of,
damn.
Wow.
Jeez. That's awesome.
That also echoes my feelings on the Wiimote.
Yeah.
God, number four is Wolfenstein The New Order. I actually picked that up pretty late in the year after I was actually listening to Giant Bomb's Game of the Year stuff, and they kept bringing up that game and talking about how awesome it was. And it ended up going on sale on Green Man Gaming the first day, and I picked it up for like $15. And that was probably the best $15 I spent this year, because that game is fucking awesome. That game is great.
I didn't know it was on for $15. Dang.
Yeah, day one it was like $20-some-odd, and then they had like a 30% discount coupon on top of it. So I got that and Evil Within for a total of like $32.
Oh, that's great.
Totally worth it. That game is fucking awesome. It's awesome. It's cool to see like somebody actually be able to do a first person shooter campaign in 2014 and make it interesting and not just completely forgettable like Call of Duty always is. Also it's weird that like BJ Blazkowicz is actually like a character.
Oh yeah.
He's actually a character, but at times he comes off very Max Payne-ish in his monologues. It's real weird.
See, but I was going to save it till mine because that's on my list as well. But the internal monologue for that game, I think, sells the character and the game. I love it when you hear him talking to himself because it kind of makes you feel like you're really in there and experiencing the same thing. I think they did a great job with that. And that
and the supporting characters are all like really interesting and really good. And the nightmare sequence is pretty much the best thing. I don't know if you've done that yet or not.
No, I don't think I'm not that far.
When you get to the safe house, go all the way to the upstairs.
Yeah, I just got. I'm just with the old people in the car right now. I just did that. I'm on the train.
Okay.
The train, and I think that's where I'm at right now.
Okay. Yeah, you're not too far away from it. Definitely, that's the first thing you should do is go all the way upstairs to the very top and do the nightmare sequence.
Okay.
That game is awesome though. There's not multiplayer, right? It's just single player.
It's just single player, as far as I know.
Okay, that's probably for the better because
that would make a good multiplayer though, with the way that they do the weapons in that game and just the feel that I would like to do. But then I wouldn't, because I think if they would have tried it in a multiplayer while making that game, which every game that I hate does this, they have to have a multiplayer in there, and so it ruins everything because I think everybody wants multiplayer in their games nowadays.
I think it would be neat to do a multiplayer co-op.
That'd
like multiple commanders on the field or something like that. Just like some way to.
Except that departs too far from the character. Like BJ is not a. Oh yeah. He's not a team player. It's that he's too badass to have somebody.
You just have a bunch of BJs walking around.
Yeah. Parallel dimension of which, you know, instead of old British guy or young American, there's just a second BJ Blazkowicz.
Well, the parallel dimension is Duke Nukem, and nobody wants that.
Oh, okay, yeah, you're right. Wait.
Duke Nukem and BJ is a tag team force.
No, because if that happened, it would be made by Gearbox, and nobody wants that. they would somehow throw Claptrap in there as a third playable character. I don't know.
Oh no! Stop.
Oh, that would be great. And you just follow you around, and they have one sit on your shoulder and just like whisper in your ear.
Squiddly, you are what's wrong with this industry. Never be in a focus group.
Oh, great. I got a great idea, guys. We'll have a little character that's really annoying but gives you funny tips. It's going to be awesome. Talks about
dubstep.
Its nickname is going to be JJB. You see what I'm going with this? See, JJB.
So, Durin, what's your fourth favorite game, fourth best game of 2014?
It was Wolfenstein the New Order, but my third is Warlords of Draenor. Sorry, World of Warcraft Warlords of Draenor is my number three. And that made it on the list because it managed to actually bring me back and like be interested in WoW for the first time in 3 years.
Yeah, you took a deep dive, didn't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. I filled out an entire server of characters. I've maxed one up to 100. I'm working on.
I can't tell if you're actually being serious.
No, I'm absolutely being serious. I have a server that had 3 characters on it. Now has 11.
What?
I only have one max level character. I'm working on another one on the Horde side. But no, like they did a really good job.
You buy your way most of the way there.
Yeah.
I could pay them $60 or I could just play the game.
Is it $60 per
character? Per character.
Whoa.
You get one for free with the expansion, and then after that, it's $60 per character. So I used it on a Warlock. So actually, I had two max level characters. Sorry. No. Sorry. One max level, 190. They actually made questing fun and interesting for the first time ever. They actually have like a coherent like story that you can follow as you're playing the game through like zones, and like there's actual like beginnings and ends to zones. So like you come into a zone and like shit's going down, whatever. And then like as you progress through the story of that zone, one, you can track your story progress, kind of similar to, I think Guild Wars 2 does something similar to that. Mm-hmm. So you can see, like, when you pull up your map, it'll say, like, you've completed, you know, 3 out of 7 story quests in that zone.
What is WoW good at if not stealing ideas for other MMOs?
That's right. And then when you are basically, quote-unquote, done with a zone, or you've finished all of the story missions, then you unlock the scenario for that zone. And then those exist for most of the zones. There's a couple kind of in the middle that, for whatever reason, they don't have scenarios for. But the scenario is basically kind of this instanced-off thing that kind of is this like big event that happens that culminates in an in-game cutscene at the very end that are all like spectacularly done and do a really good job of.
Yeah,
like,
Blizzard always does really good cinematics and everything.
Well, and these cinematics are in-game cinematics, so they're not the like CG stuff that you see at like, the beginnings of them. And these have always been really good, but with this expansion, they have implemented new character models, updated character models with higher polygon counts and actual facial rigging and stuff. And that makes those cutscenes look fucking great. Like, I actually don't care if they never do another CG cutscene, as long as it means we get more of these. Like, these cutscenes are so well done. And you get one, like, after every single zone. The final cutscene in that game is fucking awesome. And, like, as somebody who's never really been, like, super, super into lore, like, I was sitting here, like, watching the video and kind of getting chills just, like, seeing what was going down. And I didn't even play the last expansion, which is kind of what it all originates from. So they did an amazing job with that. And then on top of it, like, as somebody who doesn't do raiding anymore, there's still tons of reasons for me to log in every day on a max level character that, you know, they have the garrison, which is kind of their player housing stuff, except it's also, like, their evolution of dailies.
Someone told me it's like you have ownership over your dailies because it's your it's like it's your garrison, so you need to get in and do your dailies to get
like it's you go to your keep and you go down into your mine and mine your minerals and you know pick your herbs and you have you can set up work orders for each of the different buildings and
so you know, glad I'm not getting into that game
and
devoured my soul.
Like I'll log in and I'll go and you know do all my mining, do all everything else, and set up like 30 plus work orders for the day, and then go and go to my battle table, kind of not dissimilar from the one in Dragon Age, and send my guys out on missions to get resources, money, experience, gear, just about anything you can possibly imagine can come from those missions. And then, you know, I'll get other rewards from those missions that then can go to one of my buildings that I've chosen to put into my garrison. Cause you can't have all the buildings in your garrison. You do have to pick and choose. my garrison will look very different from somebody else's garrison based on the buildings I've chosen and which ones I've chosen to upgrade. There's a lot of depth to the garrison, and it's crazy too because like people are asking, you know, with this expansion coming out and the garrisons, you know, seeming like they're a pretty big success, like, will we see them just expanded upon in the next expansion? And Blizzard's like, yeah, we'll probably just leave them behind and, you know, figure out something else. Maybe take a few ideas from them and implement that into a whole new thing next expansion. But yeah, they'll probably just get left behind like most content. I was like, of course, all of the work that they put into this is like, no, we build all this stuff. It's cool, but you know, it's for this expansion. Next expansion, you know, you'll see something different. And I can kind of see how that goes, because like with the Mists of Pandaria expansion, the big thing in that was a farm. Like everybody had their own farm, and you can go there and
my exotic farm.
Herbs and, you know, food for consumable foods and stuff like that. And so like the garrison kind of is the evolution of that. So I can see with our next expansion kind of making an evolution of that even further or whatever, though I can't imagine what that would be at this point, like own your own Stormwind.
Your own castle. Yeah, your own castle.
Exactly. Your farm.
You kind of almost have your own castle already by the time you have a
question about the farms.
Yeah.
Are you able to have a great green macaw, a guard dog?
There's a
4x4.
There's a dog in your garrison that is actually kind of a like Easter egg-y sort of thing. He actually like just kind of runs around your garrison, but if you follow him around, he'll actually lead you to different resource nodes around your garrison that you can grab some extra resources from only once. But it's kind of this extra little thing. And there's also a bird that doesn't want to freeze, that if you can jump up next to the bird and grab him, he'll actually like follow you around your garrison.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And then there's like this, like there's all kinds of little weird hidden things in your garrison. There's also like this like kind of lake area where you can do your fishing stuff. But if you dive down in there, there's a cave. And if you go into the cave, you find out that one of the guys who's been in your garrison this whole time has been like stashing away some of your resources. Like he's been stealing them. And so you can go down there and you can like take them back and then like confront him. He's like, oh, I don't know why those are down there. And it only happens once. Like it's just kind of this one off little Easter egg-y sort of thing they hid inside your own garrison. But yeah, it's just like all kinds of crazy, like attention to detail stuff that they've done. And just like all of the, you know, of course they have the dungeon or yeah, the dungeons, the heroic dungeons. They have, the looking for raid stuff, which is kind of the casual mode raiding. So like, even if you're not somebody who's like hardcore into the game, you're not going to spend, you know, 8 hours a week doing your raiding stuff. Like there's still tons of stuff to do in that game. So it's definitely a game that like, in a time where a lot of MMOs, you know, it doesn't make sense for a lot of MMOs to have a subscription. They cram so much into that game and so much quality work into that game that like it actually does kind of justify its cost in some weird way.
Like the way you talk about it makes it sound like it's a PvE raid, and like it's a raid for the single player.
Oh, don't even get me started on there are raids on your garrison. Like you can actually like start missions that are like people will actually attack your garrison and you can do them solo or you can bring your friends in. And if you know, you get rewards for them based on how well you do on a like bronze, gold or bronze, silver, gold.
Yeah. Platinum. In the same way a raid player, like, you know, he does all this work ahead of time. It's like the amount of focus and attention and like the depth that person goes into for the raid. This seems like they put that same amount of care and like they created something that is an equivalent for a person who doesn't like to raid and just likes to do things by himself, like the average player, quote unquote.
Yeah, like as somebody who doesn't do the raiding, I don't have the, you know, time commitment to put that kind of chunk of time in there to do that. I could easily spend just as many hours split up throughout the week doing this stuff. Yeah, like gathering my stuff. Your crafting stuff is all based on cooldowns, like daily cooldowns and stuff. So to create a piece of gear, it'll take you probably, you know, a week to create that one piece. So you want to make sure you're always logging in, doing the work and everything, getting your materials together. So yeah, it is kind of this, like, it gives you a reason to want to log in, and unlike just normal dailies, which are generally go to a place, gather quests, go kill things, run back, which are super boring. Like this, even though you're kind of doing the same things every day, it's more engaging, more fun. You have choices you can make. It's a lot more interesting.
You know what else this reminds me of? Just logging in and like setting timers and gathering resources. EVE Online.
A lot less spreadsheets in this one. Though I will say, this is probably the most menus I've ever dealt with in WoW. But yeah, I can definitely see where you're going with that one, though.
Right. So, it's final thoughts, or what's your second game?
It's great. Anybody who played WoW before should definitely go back to this expansion. It's the best it's been in a long time.
Better than Pandaria by a good deal. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of people are saying like this is basically the best it's been since Burning Crusade.
Which is great.
Yeah. High praise.
Yeah. Number two game is the only one that I have finished all the way through to completion on my entire list. And I just did that yesterday. That is South Park, The Stick of Truth. That is a game that probably should not have existed and definitely should not have been as good as it was. Something that was being made by Obsidian under the mess that was THQ, and then that all folded under, and then Ubisoft, of all people, picked it up, and Obsidian released it, and it's not a broken mess. It's not your standard licensed game. It's basically a big, giant, long episode of South Park.
And there's no towers to go to open up a map.
Yeah, no towers. Yeah,
so it's pretty nice.
They managed to get far enough in the game that, you know, even Ubisoft, you know, might have gone to, we need you. No, sorry, we're too far along. We can't do that. We're just QA right now. Yeah, no towers, nothing. It's actually a really good game. Like it's a solid RPG, which is kind of weird.
I don't think the combat's very good.
I mean, the combat's good if you enjoy that like Paper Mario style combat, because that's absolutely what it is. It's completely reminiscent of that.
I don't like all the weird timing things. A lot of them are hard to see or hard to judge.
See, I never had any problems with it. Like, I generally like, I only ever used Butters ever because he's pretty much the best party member to have. And I played as a Mexican rogue, which was hilarious because Cartman actually commented on the fact that I was a Mexican rogue. Basically, said something along the lines of like, oh, that figures.
I would be surprised. If like one would think Matt Parker,
Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
I was like Trey Stone doesn't sound right. one would think those two guys would be like the chief proponents of like they were the ones who pioneered and pushed for that stuff, being the creators of South Park and all that. But it'd be neat to hear from like a second or third tier person on the totem pole to see like just. That sounds like that game has some interesting stories.
Yeah, well, and it was absolutely those two. Like, they were, especially after some of the games that had come out before with the South Park name, they were intimately committed to being there every single step of the way for this game to make sure that it came out the way they wanted it to come out. And I mean, so much so that I think they've said, like, they're not sure if they're going to do another one because this was just so taxing on them. Because obviously they're still doing the show on top of it. But then they're doing all the recording for this. They're there for the whole creative process and of it.
The process that they use to work on South Park, the show, is fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually that documentary about it, which...
Six Days to Air.
Watch. Yeah, I've been meaning to watch that because that sounds really interesting.
I'm going to have to watch that tonight. I'd love to see the behind the scenes of how they put that show together. Yeah. And from the original story. Because I know the original story was absolutely crazy, the timelines they put themselves under. So
you still do that.
No, they've actually, I believe they changed it now. They don't do that anymore. Yeah.
Jumping back on the combat of just South Park, I noticed, I think, a fair amount of games this year, like the Costume Quest 2, which, I mean, it's piggybacking on Costume Quest 1, but like that's got very similar combat. Shinboy, did you play Child of Light? Was that any similar?
I did. Not really. Child of Light is really close to, there is a series of games that combat in Child of Light is more or less lifted from. I don't remember what it is.
But it just seems like that the style of combat seen in Stick of Truth, it may not appeal to everyone, especially people who lean more heavily into like the insanity and depth that is like Divinity or something.
Mm. No, but if you're comparing it to Child of Light, they play, the way it works is very different.
Okay.
Yeah, like
Child of Light, you just sort of attack.
I haven't actually seen a lot of the combat of Shadow of Light.
No, it's just that once you select an attack, it just goes. You don't have to like time a specific button press to it or anything.
Okay. Yeah, the South Park combat straight up is Paper Mario combat. Like literally Butter's ability where he like pulls his hammer back and when it shines, it goes forward. That is exactly the hammer ability from Paper Mario.
Wow, okay.
So it's completely taken from that. So
I can't knock him for taking it from Nintendo because Nintendo puts a ton of just like resources behind perfecting that.
Yeah, it's great though because like in typical RPG fashion, like by the end, I was completely fucking broken. When I used an ability that required PP, I regained more PP than I used. So it was actually sometimes stronger just to use that than it was to just use a normal attack. My build that I had was such that like basically I would bleed the target, and while they were bleeding, they would take more damage, and then I would use that one ability that gained more PP than I lost to basically give myself an attack boost, and then I would do a normal attack after that to use that attack boost. And I was hitting guys at the very end of the game for like upwards of 11,000 damage, which like the last boss has like, maybe not the last boss because he's a little weird. But the boss before him has like almost 70,000 health. So like I killed him in minutes.
Nice.
It's just absolutely ridiculous. It's a great game. I love their Canada. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to spoil it, but
yep,
their rendition of Canada is great.
It's a very South Park-esque Canada.
It's more so the visual.
Yes. I agree. That is...
Okay, okay. Yeah, it's just great.
Like,
I love it.
On the idea of like, how are the guys from South Park convey Canada in a video game form? Yeah, okay, yeah.
And then I love that like when you go to Canada, you have to get Canada dollars. So you actually have to like you're picking them up, and you can actually go to a bank and exchange them, and they have like an exchange rate of like $1.21 to the dollar to exchange your Canadian dollars for your U.S. dollars. It's insanity. It's great. I don't know.
Nice.
But yeah, the game's awesome. I do wish they balanced your companions a little bit better because Butters is pretty much the best thing in the game. Because he gets basically a free heal every round. So I didn't use anybody else, which was kind of a shame when it came to the end of the game. But it wasn't difficult anyway, so it didn't really matter. The game's awesome. Because I'm not a huge fan of South Park. I think it's funny, but I've not kept up with that show in years, probably since the movie came out. But anybody who is even a slight fan of the series will enjoy it, I think, as long as you do enjoy RPGs and bad crude humor. Moving on though, last game, finally, number one, not surprising, Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor. That game's awesome. It's
I'm genuinely surprised.
With everything that came out this year, I mean, I didn't play some of the other people actually. I only played one other person's number one game, and it's not even on my list, so...
It would be if you had played more of it.
Maybe. Shadow of Mordor is probably one of the best games to come out this year. It takes some good ideas from other games and kind of makes them better and puts them together in an interesting and like cohesive way. And it's smart that they made a Lord of the Rings game that has nothing to do with Lord of the Rings. It's pretty much one of the best things I can say.
It has nothing to do with Lord of the Rings, like the Lord of the Rings books, the trilogy. But it's got a ton of tie-ins and written lore and all that for the Silmarillion. Like I have a coworker.
Well, apparently none of those are well done, though.
My coworker's loving it.
What I more so mean is it has nothing to do with the Lord of the Rings movies. Like they didn't They didn't just do the easy tie-in to the movies. They didn't do the easy tie-in to the familiar. Like they didn't even put Lord of the Rings into the name.
And actually, there's not even a Hobbit reference, and that would be the more topical one.
Yeah, like literally, like Gollum.
I'm not sure you want to be associated with those movies.
Well, yeah, I don't think any video game based off a movie wants to be associated, but the people paying the bills would most likely try to shill that way.
Like, let me put it this way. There was no Legolas in this entire game that I've seen.
True.
Yes, they put Gollum in there. But
you could play like Legolas if you wanted to. Like
you could. You could play like Legolas. Well, I don't know. I've yet to see any orc body surfing.
Oh, and you'd be fabulous as hell. That's what Legolas is to me.
I don't think your character gets a scrap of dirt on him at all.
True.
Or... I don't know. Looks pretty grimy.
No. Yeah, he does get pretty grimy sometimes. I think.
Okay,
he,
like, yeah.
Around the butt, I think he might actually get kind of grimy.
Fair enough. All right.
I was very confused. I was very confused by that game when I first started playing it, that you could choose between being a guy or a girl in there. And I was like, okay, well, that's kind of cool. But I remember there were like other outfits, and I was like, how did everybody get those other outfits? And realized I didn't like buy.
There's no girl playable character in this game.
Oh, it's because I haven't crossed out South Park Stick of Truth here yet. We're talking about Middle-earth Shadow of Mordor.
Yes, we are.
Oh, okay.
When I launched the game and you can go to change your outfit, your other outfit is another character, and it's a female character.
What?
Definitely
what?
A female.
Yeah. Game changer, what?
Yes. Okay, I'm going to launch it right now because I swear to God.
Are we talking about Shadow of Mordor here?
Yes, we are.
Did you buy some weird special edition?
No.
Did you buy the Russian version?
Did you buy this from Ahmed down the street? This trunk of his,
apparently,
like,
it was
gunmetal
a free
gray
update.
Van.
It was a free update? Really?
A free Power of Defiance update for Warner's Middle of Earth Shadow of Mordor features a new character skin that allows players to tackle the adventure as a woman. This coming from Polygon.
Okay. Huh. Is it like a story? Like, do they even acknowledge it? Or
the skin puts the player in the skin of Lithariel, daughter of Lady Morrowind.
Well, but the thing is, like, they reference you by name, so how does that work?
I don't know. I was going to do it, but then I was like,
that's not the wrong person.
How I've seen everybody else doing it and playing the game. So I was like, okay. Oh, by the way, I just want to mention that this login screen to get here takes way too long.
Yeah,
like the 20 different, you know, companies that...
The thing about being a PC game is most of the time you can remove them.
Yep.
Yeah, true.
It is, I think, all Bink videos or whatever, so you just got to take the files out of the folder.
Just blame Bink. Fucking Bink, man.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's not much more to say about this game. It's pretty much been said all over the internet. But sorry, it was just telling me something about removing my data, and I was like, oh god. but yeah, no, it's a great game. The narrative is interesting at the very least. The combat is super fun. The Nemesis system, which, you know, anybody who's listened to the podcast before the game came out, I was very, very, very wary of, and it's turned out to actually work out really well. It's probably one of the most interesting things about the game, which is why anybody who would look at getting the 360 version just shouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an awesome game. That's my list. We'll end it there.
All right.
Sweet. I guess moving on to the next person would be Mr. Squiddle.
So I'm going to take a different approach. I actually did, my top 10. However, I also made comments, little tiny one sentence or one quote comments for the things to make it go along pretty quickly, because most of the people know these games. And if there's any ones that are not notable, we can go into that. But starting at number 10 is going to be Watch Dogs, or Watch_Dogs. And for me, it was my GTA replacement till the PC release of GTA 5 comes out. That is my quick comment on that one. Number 9 for me is going to be Dragon Age Inquisition. So many quests, so much dialogue. It was a great game.
You are correct.
Okay.
There are a lot of both of these things.
Quick update for anybody, you know, any Squiddle update. Have you left the hinterlands?
Yes. Well, yes and no. Okay.
That's okay, all right. Yeah, just keep going. You're going to want... Yes, go ahead.
So there's this place that I found, and I think I'm out, but we'll figure that out later. Number 8 for me is going to be Shovel Knight. And I put plain 2D fun. I actually started playing it today. Picked it up during the winter sale. And I was like, this is exactly like playing an old school game. and I really loved it. The music, the artwork, really fun. So I can't wait to finish that one. It may move up on my list if I finish it, but we'll see. Let's see. Let's go on to number 7, which is going to be Monument Valley. And I think on my tweet, I threw out to Conrad and to Matt about this. Thank you for suggesting it. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. And now I'm on the second half. So that was pretty fun. And my comment was, help me find a peaceful spot inside.
Do you plan on getting the DLC that is like
I already bought it.
Okay. That's the second half you were talking about?
Yes, that's okay. The second half. Yeah. I already bought it and I'm starting to work on it. And it is a lot more longer and a little more difficult in some of the puzzles, which I enjoyed because, yes, the first part was a little bit too easy. I was able to beat it like in about 2 hours of gameplay or like an hour or something like that. It's 1:50.
But I still think, like, especially when I've seen people play it, it's an enjoyable time. It's a good atmosphere. It's like, maybe it sounds nice.
It has a good story. I mean, if you can follow the story, you can kind of get what's going on. It's kind of very vague, but you start to kind of put pieces together, and it's pretty cool. Number 6 for me is going to be Titanfall. And on my comment, I put the most fun I've had with an online FPS since vanilla TF2. I wasn't thinking I was going to enjoy it as much because I'm not really big on online games where you know fighting other people and type stuff because I'm really horrible at it. However, the game at least allowed me to feel powerful in my own right. You know, you could pull a mech down, jump into it, or Titan, and then just run around, kill people. If someone attacks you, jump out of it. Very fast-paced and very fun. So I give it kudos for that. Next is for me, number 5 is going to be South Park Stick of Truth. My comment is, this game has balls. I think what we previously talked about with Durin sums up pretty much everything I would have already said about it. And I think it was great for a RPG that was very dumbed down, not very complicated system to get into, and, you know, just all sorts of fun. Let's see. Number 4 for me is going to be Divinity Original Sin. My comments are complicated, fun, and classic. The art style and the controls, playing it, the way you read storylines and everything, I really, really got into it. Shin actually turned me onto it. We did a co-op a couple days ago.
Yeah, I want to play the rest of that game co-op. So.
That's pretty awesome. I love it.
All on the same lines of you guys doing the co-op, are you going to be streaming, continue streaming?
I will continue streaming.
Yeah.
Where do people find that?
At the end of the show.
Oh, okay. Right, yeah.
So, and one of the things that I found out that was funny that Shin was saying is, you know, it's a very serious game. You have consequences for things you do that you normally don't have. Shin has so much patience co-oping with me through this because of how dumb I like to play games.
Okay, to give an example. One, we went to this graveyard in the first town that you go to. And I forgot what the woman there who's grieving.
Oh, yeah.
She was saying something about her daughter. Yeah, and then I'm like, we're going to need to, because we were trying to find a dude who was murdered's grave. So I'm like, okay, Skrull, you grab this shovel. Like, I obviously know what's going to happen having played through the game. So he just starts digging up graves while I'm talking to this woman. And then him not really realizing what happens, digs up the grave that she was mourning over. And she's like, wait a minute, what the hell? And starts attacking us. And we had to kill her.
Yeah, and that was...
And then later on... Oops, sorry, dude. Later on, in that same graveyard, as he didn't learn his lesson, he just keeps digging up random graves and digs up a grave where a level 8 enemy shows up and we're level 2. So I'm just like, you know what? We're not going to load a save or anything. We're going to stand here and die and you're going to learn a lesson.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So I know not to piss him off as much. We've got great patience dealing with
him. I mean, I almost screwed up once with that game.
Yeah, I know.
So.
Squiddle, you play that game like I do, and that sounds great.
Yeah, it's just like what I learned with roguelikes is you have to appreciate and learn from every death, and even when Shin Boy just like rubs your face in it, and just like...
Oh, yeah. and you know, and I was talking, actually, even what I was saying to him today is I had a concept, a thought in my head, and I wanted to confirm it with him, and he said, I said, Shin, if I was frozen in place by a spell and my teammate cast a fireball at me, theoretically, in this game, that should melt the ice and I would be free from the cold spell. He goes, exactly. Yep. I absolutely love that concept.
I mean,
that,
you'll yeah. take the damage from sure. getting hit by the fireball, but you'll be unfrozen.
Sure. Like it's a better, more controlled Magicka.
Inversely, Shinboy. Kind of. If someone were just like, you know, throw a, like shoot a giant boulder at Squiddle, would he then shatter apart like T-1000 and Terminator 2?
Sadly, no.
God.
Oh well.
Never mind. It's not better because Magicka would have had him shatter. And then say, I'll be back.
So yeah, so that was the Divinity Original Sin. Really digging it. Can't wait to play some more. To really, really like it. Number three, and so we're going to get my top three here at this point, is going to be Wolfenstein New Order. My comments were best inner dialogue. That game, I had bought Middle Earth and was playing that, and I was like, all right, well, it's game of the year time. Let's at least load up what I purchased. And I started playing Wolfenstein, and I probably played it for 3.5 hours without getting up. And yep. I haven't done that in a very long time. The game itself, I think, was spectacular in its delivery with its main character. I played the original Wolfenstein, never really had a much story background on it, what the main character's name was. I know B.J. Blazkowicz and everything, but it humanized him in a way that I never thought that that character from how it began would have been character, been like that. So I thought that was great. And I saw the tasteful sex scene that Patrick commented on Giant yeah. Bomb. And I was like, yeah, that's I get what he was coming from. That was actually very, very tasteful in a way that a lot of other games try to just throw it in your face. That was actually pretty interesting in that scenario. So, Wolfenstein, New Order, number three. Number two for me is going to be Middle-Earth Shadows of Mordor. My comment is what Assassin's Creed should have been.
I'm sorry, it's Shadow of Mordor.
Sorry, Shadow of Mordor.
That's semantics, please.
Gosh. There's a lot of shadows in the game if you turn them on.
There are a lot of shadows.
It definitely fed that vibe of open world, fun, third person, just... I don't know. I love the idea. The storyline, not into as much as other games, but just playing through it. And the Nemesis system, of course, you know, hands down, probably one of the most fun things I've seen in a game where you get killed, person gets promoted and gets more powerful. Time goes on, more powerful enemies. I think it's just an awesome way.
I think even cooler than that is that if you kill someone, they can come back like looking different with different things. That's the part that's cool to me.
Yeah, like you literally have to behead them to get rid of them entirely.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you behead them, they won't come back.
Huh. Yeah,
okay, they can come back and be like, say you kill a dude, he can come back later with like half his face being made of like a metal cage when you screwed up his face last time.
See, I've been going around tagging my commanders or whatever, chiefs or whatever, and just shooting them from afar with an arrow and killing them. Severing their heads. So that'll be interesting to see what happens with the 15 people I've done that to so far. Really cool. I like the way that, of course, it wasn't directly tied to any movies or the books. It was a one-off thing. They did a really good job with it. The subtle tie-in with Gollum is very tastefully done, I think. So, it's my number two. Number one for me is Far Cry 4. And my comments are, if you are using anything other than a bow and a silenced pistol, you're playing it wrong.
You are correct.
I personally would go so far as, because this is how I've been playing through 3, is if you're using anything other than just a bow.
A silenced pistol's cool, though.
Well, yeah, it is cool. But I literally, like, it makes it so much harder if you just give yourself a bow. And,
oh, true.
Like, if you run out of arrows, you better sneak around and pick up all your arrows again.
Yeah.
It's great.
The game, I mean, you know, the game play hasn't really changed much since Far Cry 3. They tweaked a lot of things, minor things that I think was really well done. Added a couple cool new things. The helicopter's awesome. Love that thing. But overall, the multiplayer stuff not really care to the multiplayer for that. And, beat the game in about 20 minutes. So that was fun.
Oh, you did that?
Yeah, I did that. And that was pretty interesting. So, you know, I had actually played a while to it, and I switched PCs out. And when I loaded it back up on this one, I was like, well, let's just see what this whole thing's about and tried it out. So, but it was funny because I was kind of already getting to that ending in my mind. and the ending just solidified what I already thought after I played on my other system. So, yeah, for me, that's and the one thing I love about the game, which is why it's my number one game, is you can just sit down, pick it up, play it, go around, kill things, have fun, close it down. You don't have to do the storyline stuff. So for me, it's much like a GTA is, where in GTA, I rarely ever finish the game. It's more for getting in the car, drive around, shoot people, have fun, do crazy stuff. Far Cry for me, like I said, since there's no GTA out for PC yet, because fuck Rockstar for always delaying a PC release. Far Cry 4 is where it's my most entertaining game, and that's why it's number one for me this year. Last year. This year.
This year. Year last year. Every year.
Every year. And I am hoping that they make another Blood Dragon based off of Far Cry 4 in some way.
Well, they've already said they're not going to do a Blood Dragon, but they would like to do something like that for this game.
Oh, Blood Dragon's so good.
Okay, so I'm hoping they maybe do something weird, so one-off.
So, no, I have that. I have not even installed it yet.
Oh, it's so good. It's fun. Yeah, that's my top 10 right there, guys.
Cool beans.
Very cool.
Thurb's back, right?
Okay, good.
I am indeed back.
I was worried.
What do you mean? I never left.
Oh, that's right.
But yeah, I would say on the subject of, like, you know, Blood Dragon and all that, you don't want to do the same bit. You want to do the next bit. But this is also Ubisoft, who just do the same bit over and over again.
Yeah, of course, genres even. Well, that's what I mean. That's why it's actually nice to hear them come out and say, like, we are not doing another Blood Dragon for this game, but we would like to do something just as surprising.
Yeah.
If they had a Blood Dragon game where, like, your tutorial mission was jumping from tower to tower to open up the entire map before you actually play, would be pretty comical if they could laugh at themselves on that one.
I think the most underrated part of the comedy of Blood Dragon is that it's set in the dystopian future of 2007.
Yeah. That's pretty good about it, too. All right. Sure, boy.
Yes.
Tell me about 10 games that came out in 2014.
10 games that came out.
Perfectly, like, you know, good ones.
These are just 10 games at random.
yeah, 10 okay games.
On my list is actually a collection of games. It is the Jackbox Party Pack. I have PS4 listed just because that's what I bought it on. I played it on PC, too. It doesn't really matter what you play it on. Since they did the genius move of letting you use your phone.
I was going to say, I played it on my iPhone.
Yep, I think that was true. I'm just, you know what, since Scooter was reading notes, I'm going to read what I wrote for each of these games because none of them are that long. At least bits and pieces. So removing the need for controllers, I'll talk about that. Lyswater may miss the mark, which it does, but You Don't Know Jack, Fibbage XL, and Drawful have been among the most fun I've had with local multiplayer games this year, which is saying a lot because this year is sort of the year when most of those good local multiplayer games came out, like Towerfall and Nidhogg and the like. I think it was last year, but still.
Nidhogg came out, that's right.
Divekick Edition mm-hmm. Plus was this year.
That's true, that was this year. Is that out on PC? I think it is,
right? Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, you can play as Johnny Gat.
Yep. I think that Drawful is one of the coolest games I've played in a while. Also, the name is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you can draw your image.
Because it's awful. Awful. Yeah.
Drawing awful. Drawful.
Awful drawing.
Little notes when it's like your drawing that's up, it just says, you did this. There's no taking it back. And stuff like that. They're always funny to me. Number 9, Bravery Default 2 for the Nintendo Suri Diesu.
Are you okay there, Shin? You sound like you have amnesia. Do you need to ring a bell?
I played Bravery Default for the sequel, I think is the official subtitle. Speaking of amnesia, I still think one of the dumbest things of the year is the fact that the character who has amnesia is named Ring a Bell.
Yeah.
Such a dumb joke. Like, that combat in that game is probably the best, like, turn-based combat in a JRPG in quite some time. And I really like the job system. I like the fact that you have to sort of go out of your way and defeat someone who's using that job to get that job. It would be higher on the list if I played the last few chapters, which have a reputation for not being great. So I sort of stopped right before that part of the game begins.
I had so much fun breaking that game. Just like completely breaking that game was just awesome.
And if you get a lot of street passes, you can break it really, really easily, which I think that's what happened, right? You got a bunch of packs.
When I went with the packs and I was able to collect all those one-off characters that you can throw into a battle and win. Mm-hmm. And as like level three, I would go on the map, your little sub map that you can challenge characters on to build the town or whatever, and just challenge the highest level people or the highest level characters that came in there, and then just threw down like the one or two that I had, and then passing people, got like 100 of them, and it was pretty awesome just doing that. But
you can only use those once, so they would
all use them once. But see, at PAX, while doing that every day and like every couple hours just going in there, I would get more and more and more and more and more every time. So in 3 days, I broke the game. And it kind of lost interest for me in that. So that was kind of my fault, but it was still fun to do.
Yeah. I don't know. I really like the combat in the game. Like, every single JRPG that I've ever played or heard anyone ever talk about can be broken in some significant way. Just something about those games.
Sure.
But I never do that. Like, I don't find it enjoyable. And I really had a ton of fun. Like I said, it would be higher if not for the fact that the back half of that game has a reputation that stopped me from playing it. Number 8, Monument Valley. I don't know. I was getting a drink. I don't know how much you said about Monument Valley. I know it was on your list as well.
Not too much. I mean, my comment was that it helped me find a peaceful spot inside because it was a very relaxing game. And
yes, it is very much fun.
So
I think the little crow people are adorable and really funny.
Yeah, that was hilarious when they would just like yell at you as you walked by them. And I'm like,
call you. So there's one level in particular where they're just sitting on like steps, sort of swinging their legs, yelling at you as you walk by. Thought that was pretty funny. Moving on up to number 7 is Titanfall, which I got when it came out, and I wish more people were playing it, because I think the modes that they've added for free, like they added like a horde mode type deal, that I think is pretty fun. I still think that the feel of that game is the best of any competitive shooter I've played in a while.
Yeah, I agree with that, definitely.
It's fast, but you never feel like you're out of control like you can in a lot of fast like arena shooters.
The control of that game is great. Like everything about it is great if you just remove the Titans. Like the best part of that game is the one without the Titans.
No, I disagree. No, because it's fun when you're on a roof somewhere and out of nowhere you could just like snipe a Titan with your Titan gun or whatever. Like, it's so much fun.
Like wall jumping, like running up a wall at an angle and double jumping off and jumping on the back of a Titan and just like unloading into the engine of it or whatever that thing is, the power cells or whatever, and then just jettisoning off like into the sky is so amazingly fun.
Well, that's the thing. Like things like that are really fun or were, but like they talked about on the Bombcast, like everyone has already figured out that that's what people do. So you can't really have that same fun anymore because you get killed pretty much instantly if you like try to rodeo a Titan.
I mean, I guess. My only problem with that game is not really anything gameplay related. It's that there's not enough like periphery to it. The progression is kind of bad. There are not that many maps and not that many modes.
It like suffers from the same things like Destiny does.
Yeah.
It's got a solid core. It's just like the...
Like it's one of those things where I look at it and go, if they just take this core gameplay and put it into like a Titanfall 2, which has basically take this core gameplay and strap all the things that Call of Duty has been doing for years onto it, and you probably have a game that I would like more than Call of Duty.
Yeah, my favorite thing about Titanfall is that it probably means Titanfall 2 is going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I played that game until there's a part where you like level up and then you start over again. I don't know, what is it like? And I got to the part where I start over again, and I'm like, I really don't want to do this. Like, what is my draw? Because I had fun leveling the character up, like, in that aspect. But once I had to do it again, I'm like, no, I'm not going to grind through this game.
Like, half the fun of leveling up in those games is unlocking, like, new guns or a new sight for your favorite gun. And, like, in Titanfall, you get that, like, right away and abusing it the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, like, that's the thing, like... Like, once you have hit that max level and you basically go to prestige, the point is literally just, like, because you can. It's like an online rep thing. Yeah, well, it's like an online rep thing. Like, there's really no, like, gameplay reason to do it, ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
It's literally, like, it shows that you have played the game that much, that you have, you know, prestige 3 times or something like that. Like, it's,
all that being said, game's really fun. In spurts. Let's see. That was number 7. Number 6, Mario Kart 8. I've had a bunch of people over to play Mario Kart a whole bunch of times, and it's still really fun. The online play works, which is a miracle. And the DLC is actually like $12 for 8 maps, like 8 characters, a bunch of cars. It's actually a crazy good deal.
Yeah.
Which means it's only a matter of time before Nintendo screws up DLC.
Yep. And this is like the good part about Nintendo being so far behind everyone else in terms of online stuff, is we have a solid 3 or so years before Nintendo actually fucks up DLC. If they follow the same trend as everyone else.
I think it will be next year, meaning 2016, if they release DLC for whatever Zelda game comes out this year. It'll be like one extra dungeon with one extra gadget, and it'll be like $15. And that's when the downfall will happen.
But if I'm not mistaken, I mean, Nintendo never really follows the trends.
They just do like 4 years late.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys can make Epona go 10% faster with these 2 extra carrots, and
it'll cost. Oh my god!
It's only 99 cents for
part of me wishes I could pay 99 cents.
But the carrots are consumable, so you have to buy them again for another 99 cents.
Get a coin doubler.
But Zelda's free to play, so you can just get in there. You can play the entire campaign for free.
It's a ruby doubler.
Only a matter of time. Counting the days. That was number 6. Number 5 is Transistor, which I'm surprised has not been mentioned up to this point, in all honesty.
I haven't played it.
Played it, a good chunk of it. In my reasoning, I didn't put it on my list, to be honest with you. I loved the game. I thought it was really fun to play. When I took a hiatus from gaming for a bit, and I came back about 4 or 5 months later, or after this came out, I didn't remember what I was doing in the game. I didn't remember... Mm-hmm. Why I was playing the game or where my character was. And for me, that's why it didn't get on there, because I wanted to pick it up again, but it wasn't memorable enough for me to throw it out there. But it was, great game.
Game's super short. Like, you can play it in a sitting if you really want to.
Like, I enjoyed like the first half of it, like especially leading up to the at the top of the tower.
Whatever, spoil it. Who cares?
Like when you fight the giant like worm squid thing, like
I really
liked that point, but then after that, historically, like the combat got a lot just like it got tougher, but in an aggravating way. Like when they make it so you can't see anything, it becomes a thing of like, well, I don't know, like I can't make any choices. Throwing in the dark, and that got me frustrated.
So. I thought mechanically the final boss was predictable yet interesting at the same time. Like, of course, I'm not going to say who it is, but of course the mechanic of the last boss is that they can do the same thing you can, where they pause time and do take a turn, which actually makes you sort of think about combat in a weird, different way. You sort of have to think defensively.
Strategery.
Yes. I thought was really good. And I think the very, very subtle change they make to the very beginning of the game after you beat it and restart it, it's one of those things where I wasn't really paying attention and I heard the little subtle audio change and like stood straight up in my seat immediately.
Okay, I'm going to have to finish this game now. Just based on that, I have to finish it and see what you're...
And I had to look it up on YouTube to make sure I heard it right. And I did. I'm not going to say what it is, though. It's a very, very subtle change in the sound of one of the lines in the beginning. That was number 5, so moving up to number 4 is Dragon Age. I'm probably further in than any both of you.
Yeah.
So I've done... the reason it's probably higher than on my list than it is on like yours is because, like Duren said, once you get to the companion stuff, it does get a lot more entertaining. And also, it is higher up my list because I think the co-op is really fun.
I've yet to try that.
Played like a 6-hour marathon of that with some people and had a good time.
So, my thing with Dragon Age, and I love the idea. I this is dumb, right? But I love the romancing part of Dragon Age.
It's always awkward and funny and great,
right? And I had this weird obsession in the first game with the witch chick, whatever Morgan? Her name was. Morgan. Yeah. I was like obsessed with that storyline and my character and the relationship between my character and Morgan. And when the DLC came out for that, you could do that. And the DLC did what it did with that character. If you've never played the first one, fuck you then.
I don't think the game's aged well at all.
No. Well, But I was so sad, and it just like it was the feels that I had at that point. I was like, I don't know if they can ever do this again. So I'm always wondering if they can like get me reengaged with a character and playing through again. So I'm hoping that happens going through this. So we'll see.
Cassandra was turning down my advances as a lady. I was very upset.
I got the commander chick to like me right now, so I'm happy with that.
Commander? Wait, hold on.
Whatever the lead Inquisition, I can't remember her name.
What? Yeah, Cassandra.
Is that? Oh, I thought you said Sandra.
Cassandra.
Cassandra, okay, yeah.
I thought you meant the person that I am romancing, Miss Josephine Montdelier. Which I don't remember, like, having not played a ton of the first game, because I think nowadays that game plays terribly, and just having not played two. I was not super familiar. I did a little reading up on the world. I didn't realize Orlais was that French.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's basically French Renaissance France.
See, I was surprised when they did that whole thing where if you never played the first two, you can go through that progression to kind of build your character, which I thought was a really, really awesome way that they did that. And there's a lot of parts in there. I'm like, yeah, I don't remember any of this. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, I remember all of this. So I remember playing the first game, but I could care less about any of the storyline except for what I was talking about. And I focused more on that and forgot all about everything that happened in the first game. Second game, I remembered more than I did.
I mean, it's more recent, so it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so that whole implementation of that system or whatever, like that's neat if you've never played the game before. But it does this thing where, like, if you did, it imports a save into there and then, like, creates kind of a world state for you. But it might as well not, because it got like half of my shit wrong. So I still had to go back in there. Like it said that I died, and I was like, no, fuck you. I had my demon baby. I made sure I didn't die. So that was kind of annoying, because I ended up having to spend like the next 45 minutes basically crafting my world again. I was like, well, shit, at that point, I might as well just have not played the first game then and just done this in the first place.
You know,
but it was crazy. It was crazy how many how many choices it carried into there.
Out of context, that I didn't even remember doing. I had my demon baby. just sounds really weird.
That's going to be the subtitle for this podcast.
With the preface, I didn't die. I had my demon baby.
Okay, so I didn't actually romance anybody in that game. But you are given the option of, because I feel like spoiling that game at this point. Who cares? It's old as shit.
Came out like forever ago.
Yeah. You have the option basically towards the very end. Morgan comes to you in your tent and is like, hey, you know, so quickly, a warden has to basically kill the archdemon. When the warden kills the archdemon, they die. That's the whole like twist of the game. Morgan comes to you kind of in the 11th hour and says, hey, you know, nobody actually has to die. I can do this thing where if you create a baby within me that I can use for whatever purposes I want to use it for, then you will be safe from this curse of the Grey Wardens. You know, you will be able to kill the Archdemon and nobody will have to die. And I'm like, all right, sure, why not? So I had my demon baby with Morgan. She disappeared, and my character is alive.
You know, I just have had a realization that if I was in a real game environment or fantasy environment, I would definitely be a Sith Lord if we're going to put any tag on this, because just looking back at all my choices in games and thinking about it right now. So,
but only a Sith deals in absolutes. That's the second time I've used that phrase in the past 2 days. Okay, so that was number quattro. So now we're into the... That was for our Spanish listeners.
There you go.
Now to the top three. At number three is Bayonetta 2. I'm just going to read what I wrote because Dern sort of alluded to it. A fun-ass video game that does not give a shit that it is nothing more than a fun-ass video game is oddly refreshing at a time where every game feels like it needs to change the world.
Yes.
That's very poignant. It's perfectly stated.
And there's another quote from one Jeffrey Gerstmann of GiantBomb.com, who I think a couple months ago just said, there's something to be said for a fun-ass video game.
So. And you can, you know, throw on the Star Fox outfit and have R-Wings flying around.
Honestly didn't know until that video on Giant Bomb how much those outfits changed like everything else in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Like Jean had ears on as well. I'm like, this is weird.
Yeah. Really,
that's when you draw the line? Not that you're like on a jet fighting angels and...
No, like it's weird that they put that much detail into it.
Yeah.
That's more of what I meant. That game is weird.
Guys, I really want to get a Wii
game. I was saying before, there was a distinct moment in Chapter 4. It's the chapter that's in the quick look, so it's not like I'm really spoiling much, where you're fighting the Lumen Sage, and it's like a big one-on-one fight. And there's a certain point where like you each summon giant monsters and they're fighting in the background of you guys fighting in the foreground.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this one moment that's like seared into my memory where the Lumen Sage is to my left. And when you dodge like at the right time, you go into Witch Time, which is basically slow-mo. And he was swinging one direction and I hit the dodge button. Car's driving by my house with a loud muffler.
Anyway, holy crap.
You
just went into Witch Time.
Yeah, I did. That's exactly what happened. Dodged that car at the right time and went all slow-mo. And yeah, he was swinging on top, so I dodged and like slid underneath. And as it went into slow-mo, I was like sliding on my knees, like head tilted back, like I was like under the limbo stick. And while in the background, there was like lava exploding, and my giant demon was punching his giant demon in the face in slow-mo. And it was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And I love it so much.
Can you explain without spoiling, because I don't know if it's a spoiler or not, what who Bayonetta is or what the
Bayonetta
character is?
Bayonetta is in Umbra Witch. The Umbra Witches and the Lumen Sages are two ancient factions that have been warring for reasons that I'm sure are explained, but I wasn't paying attention.
Okay.
And basically, she is basically a human, more or less, that was imbued with these powers, and now she wears clothes made of her hair.
Yes. So, even though she has a haircut, somehow the hair appears now.
Yep. I actually think the character looks better with short hair.
Yeah, I think so.
That's just me.
Yeah.
So the game opens with a gratuitous crotch shot.
Yeah, that was probably the weirdest point to me. Was actually when I first started the game up, like knowing that this is a game that was published by Nintendo, and it like opens up on a gratuitous crotch shot, and then like within a few seconds after that, you see her like riding on her horse, and the camera like zooms in on her butt bouncing up and down on the horse, making a boing sound every time.
I remember that happening.
Yep.
I skipped a lot of that opening cutscene because I didn't like the random, like stereotypical New Yorker Italian character at all.
Oh.
just forget about it.
Forget about it.
Skip that cutscene a whole lot.
When I heard Patrick talking about the ending of that game, and he said like some pole dancing thing on the airplane, I had to find. I was driving to work, and while driving, I YouTubed that video to see what he was talking about.
Skip
like,
that
I
had part to of see those credits today. I finished the game. The game. I didn't realize it was funny. I played that whole game with a pro controller. It's the way to go. But I had the gamepad sitting next to me on like the little table next to the chair I was sitting in, and credits started rolling. I'm like, whatever, it's the credits. I'll let them roll on the gamepad while I flip the TV back to, you know, TV. And all of a sudden the gamepad starts like vibrating. I'm like, wait, hold on, what's going on? And I didn't realize the first game did this, I guess, too, is that there's a whole bunch of bonus boss fights and combat scenarios during the credits.
Oh, shit.
But like,
oh,
the credits are still scrolling in the middle of the screen. It's kind of funny.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I almost died a whole bunch of times in the credits. Yeah. That was number 3. It's really fun. Number 2 is a game called Endless Legend, which I talked about a couple weeks ago on the show. It is, at its core, a fantasy 4X game. 4X being, like, Civ. But there is a ton piled on top of it. Like, each unit has like RPG style gear, which you can upgrade with materials you find in the map. There are hero characters, which in addition to having RPG style gear, have RPG style skill trees and gain experience. Actually, the units gain experience too, but they don't have skill trees. There are like markets where you can buy and sell materials and also buy and sell heroes. And each faction since it is a fantasy game and you're with a bunch of different races, sort of break the rules in a meaningful way. Like one faction, the cultists, you're only allowed to have one city. That's it. You can't expand. Another faction, I forgot what they're called, like the roaming merchants or something, they control the markets. So at will, they can block access to the markets for any of the other races in the game. There is, I forgot what they're called. I refer to them as sort of like the Lich King dudes. They're called the Broken Lords. They don't use food, which is one of the resources that's normally in these games used to grow population. They just sort of generate money and buy population, which I think is kind of cool. And, you know, stuff like that. They all break the rules in a really weird way, which means that, you know, with skill trees and being able to buy other races' heroes, being able to buy other races' units, because instead of destroying units, you sell them and they go up on the marketplace for other players to buy. It pretty much means that there are endless ways a game could play out. See what I did there, you guys? Huh?
Zing.
I was scared no one was going to respond.
I'm sorry, I was too busy shaking my head. I'm sorry.
Between this and Civ, it is the better one of these games to come out this year. They buy along the country mile.
So you described what a 4X game is 4X by saying it's generally Civ. What does 4X mean? Like,
okay, turn-based strategy where the 4Xs, it's like explore, expand, exploit, exterminate. Basically, you start out with a small settlement, you explore the area around you, you expand with more cities, you exploit the land around you as well as the other players via gathering materials and trading, and then you exterminate and, you know, wipe out other players. It normally are classified, or, you know, the main tenets of the genre are turn-based. The map is normally made up of a bunch of hexes or something similar. There's a bunch of diplomacy options and a bunch of different ways you can win. Like, you can either get economic victory, diplomatic victory, kill the shit out of everyone victory, etc. So
I'm surprised at how much grammar Nazis are people on the internet and in games that it wouldn't be 4E based on.
4X sounds more extreme.
It does. It does. Definitely. More X is more extreme. Definitely. It's a porno. Oh. More
4E X's. Sounds like drugs. 4X sounds like video games.
You could say it's the 4A. See, 4A with E, with the A, E, A,
yep,
E.
Exactly. Yep, yep, nailed it. That's number two. I know, Dern, you said you were looking to play it at some point.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I haven't even played either of them, but I could. That seems way more interesting to me than Beyond Earth.
I just like it because, like, in Civ, you feel like you're playing a different skin of more or less the same, like, character or race.
Yeah.
Well, in this, I can tell you that each race is, like, very much different. It's sort of like they take the ideas introduced by slightly mixing it up in Civ and sort of take it to the extreme. Like, the Venice merchants in Civ 5, I think they're in one of the expansions, you can't, like, settle cities, but you can buy them. And, you know, Endless Legend sort of takes that to the extreme with the cultists by saying, nope, you have one city.
Oh, wow.
Like, the way they work is I want a game with them. To go into a bit of detail, is you're sort of like crazy religious freaks. Like, you are a cult, hence the cultists. And the minor factions, which are sort of like barbarians in Civ, except you can sort of assimilate them into your empire instead of just wiping them out. Your job is to convert them. Like, you convert them to your cult. And the way that works is, since you only have one city building units, each minor faction settlement that you convert just starts generating units for you, depending on what minor faction it is. So there was one point where I went, you know what, I'm just going to wipe everyone out. I'm going to need to fight a war on three fronts. I just started taking units from all of these minor faction settlements around the map and started moving them all in different directions. So you can still have coverage throughout the map, but still only having one city. It's really cool. There's a lot of cool design choices in there like that. That's just an example. That's number two. I like it a lot. Gonna play more of it. That's a game where I start at like 8 p.m. and then just go, oh god, it's 3 a.m. What happened? and then number one game of the year, which is also a game that I had several 5-6 hour marathons with, is Divinity Original Sin. It is the best RPG I've played in a while. and like it is a true role playing game. Like you have a personality or can pick a personality for your character depending on how you answer things, and it's not just like, I mean, there are like, you know, certain attribute traits plus one, but it's more like if you're an asshole, people will treat you like you're an asshole. You can kind of screw yourself over and kill an NPC, and guess what? Now you just straight up don't have access to what they had. Stuff like that. Okay. There are things later on where you need a certain skill to handle Tenebrium, I think is the material, or you need a certain item. And I wasn't paying attention. And what these items do is they give you what's called the rot, which is pretty much it very slowly ticks your life away, like one at a time, but there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. And I accidentally sold one of these items to a random merchant, thus giving him the rot. He died. And there was nothing I could do about it.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, so I think, Darren, I mentioned
well, yeah,
to
but
you,
he died so you could live, right?
Yes, very much so. I mean, I could handle it. I had the skill and the items. That's why I had it in my inventory. I think it was... Did I mention to you, Darren, that I had a metal-ass metal analogy?
Yes.
Okay. Squiddle, you're going to appreciate this.
All right.
Comparing the two RPGs that came out this year, the two big ones that I played, which is Divinity and Dragon Age. A lot of people seem to be giving a lot of praise to Dragon Age and not as much as a whole on the internet to Divinity. I see it as such. To compare it to metal albums.
Okay.
Dragon Age Inquisition is to Divinity Original Sin like something like Metallica's The Black Album is to Primordial's To the Nameless Dead. If you understand what I'm saying.
Okay, I got you.
Where yep. You take one, you take Dragon Age / you take The Black Album, right?
Right.
There's good stuff on there. There's a lot of good stuff on there. But it's a lot of times appreciated by people that are not big fans of the genre. Like, they're just sort of more general music fans can go, yep. Okay, I like Enter Sandman, I like Sad But True's on that album, stuff like that. And then you look at something like Divinity, where much like To the Nameless Dead, it's a bit more raw, it's not as refined. But once you get into it, there's a lot more to it.
Oh, yeah.
And if you are a fan of the genre, it's one of those things that you'll really appreciate, even though it's not nearly as polished. The fact that it's sort of rough and raw sort of adds to the appeal.
Yeah, and to go on your metal analogy here, it's kind of like when I look at top 10 metal albums or metal albums that just released, and I'm like, okay, Linkin Park is no longer a metal group, okay? That's not metal. Stop. So
wait, were they ever a metal group?
When they first started, they could have been. They were like on that edge of new metal, okay. And they could have been metal, but then they kind of just went like pop in a sort of weird guitar riff drumming way, in my opinion. But I digress. I get exactly what you're saying with that, definitely.
Yeah, because like for those of you who don't know, Primordial's To the Nameless Dead, they sort of used like the first or second recordings for everything. So it has sort of like an unrefined, raw is the best word to use, sound to it. It doesn't seem like something they went over a million times to get it perfect. They just sort of got into the right mindset and just did it. And that's what Divinity feels like to me compared to something like Dragon Age, which obviously had a bunch more money thrown behind it. And they probably went through everything on there to perfect it a million times over. But I think in that process, you lose something.
Mm. Yeah.
You lose the heart of it a little bit. There you go. That is my number one game of the year.
Sweet. Woo-hoo. Yeah, I've heard nothing but praise for it. I think the one like negative I've heard throughout the entire year, like I've had a whole mountain of people talk praise about Divinity, but it was just like some of the boss fights get so challenging that people resort to interesting methods to defeat
the thing is
putting a bunch of chairs to block the room.
With that game though, like I was having a talk with both Loopy and Albano played through the game. They played through the whole game co-op. There's no similar to like, I guess the Soul series is a good analog. There's no such thing as cheesing a boss in that game. If you understand what yep. I mean, like everything is a valid tactic. Like there's a boss late in the game that summons lava, which is different from a fire field. Squiddle will learn this, where fire field just sort of applies burning, but lava applies death.
Joy.
And one of the boss that is guarding the entrance to the final dungeon summons lava and teleports your party members into it.
Nope.
But since Divinity is a hard but fair game, and the enemies have to deal with the same rules that the players do. You can teleport the boss into his own lava.
Oh.
It's stuff like that.
Okay.
That I think is really fantastic.
So it's more so like that's where the fun of it kind of comes into those challenging fights is finding the like creative way to handle it.
Yeah, like, okay, this boss fight starts when you're walking out of this small room into this big room. Let's put a bunch of chairs here before we leave to sort of funnel enemies in. Stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't think I said it was wrong. I said it was an interesting approach by using chairs.
And it all works, and it's all perfectly valid. It's not an easy game, especially at the beginning when you're learning everything.
Yeah, like when you're just going to a cemetery and just digging up graves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He killed us real good.
All right.
That's pretty fun. I think you teleported away, didn't you?
Yep, I did. I said, you're going to die, and I'm going to get away.
So I guess over the course of us recording this, I've gone from like 6 games to 10, but this is the 10th. Was one of
them Endless Legend?
No, because, well, I... Not Endless Legend. I did get Endless Dungeon, but I haven't played enough of that.
Every time I mention Endless Legend, I remember another thing that is in that game. That game in combat has proper initiative and turn orders. That game is insane.
That's pretty crazy.
But I don't want to go too far into it, even by proper.
Like, it's not like, okay, one team goes and the other team goes. Each unit has an initiative stat, much like in an RPG.
Okay.
That throws it into a turn order. It's crazy. That game's crazy.
Sweet.
Game's crazy.
Yeah, just going through quickly my 10. Starting off, I just want to throw two honorable mentions that couldn't make the list, but I just like had an amazing experience with them this year. Sleeping Dogs, it's a really good game. And then Kerbal Space Program, just because I made that dumb bet to get to Duna. But yeah, just going through, like, Banished, I guess, is my number 10. I had a good time with that, however brief, only because, like, that was my SimCity experience, more so than SimCity from 2013. Because, yeah, I'm pretty sure they came out in 2013.
I think you're right.
Yeah, just, like, it was a quality game where I just had a lot of fun with the like initial steps, but then once the village was more or less established, they're like, yeah, I got this. This is fine. I'll put this down now. But yeah, it's all a little fun. It's like Age of Empires without the combat. And the only thing that's killing you is just like weather.
Mother Nature.
Yes. The elements, drought and whatnot.
I really need to get that game.
Yeah. It's a nice game. And it actually does a better job of handling, like, individual AI knowing where their house is and whatnot.
Oh, that's so bad with SimCity.
But that does also mean that you have to do a little bit of micro to, like, make sure you have enough, like, lumberjacks and whatnot. Kind of like RimWorld in that same venue, just microing each person. Anyway, next game was Shovel Knight. That would probably get higher on the list. I just haven't played enough of that. I picked it up at the Steam sale, and I've gotten a couple bosses in. I've really enjoyed all about it. People say it is a good like Mega Man clone, and as someone who loves a lot of stuff about Mega Man but hasn't played any of those games, Shovel Knight's pretty good. So I would
probably seems to be a bit of DuckTales in there as well with jumping on the shovel.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Initially, and this is. This is something that I've been wrestling with for a lot of things. Like Middle Earth didn't make the list because I didn't like the way it controlled. I think part of that might also be just me like getting over the Xbox 360 controller. And like, I imagine I would love Shovel Knight. Like I've gotten accustomed to it now, but I think I would really love it if I got around to hooking up my PS4 controller to the PC.
I mean, super easy.
Yeah.
I need to get
a Bluetooth adapter for my PC.
See, I used the Xbox One controller for Shovel Knight, and I thought it was great. And also, Middle Earth, the same thing. It's probably almost my go-to for Middle Earth. And yeah. I didn't have any issues with it, but I've never tried the PS4 one, so.
I think more so for Middle Earth, it was just, like, the whole amount of stuff they tried to cram into those buttons of things you could do.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Like, I'll find myself running, and then my thumb to move the bottom joystick doing something else. Like, I'll have my finger move the bottom joystick in some weird function. I can't remember what it's for, but I can see where you're coming from on that.
There's that approach of just like how much stuff can we put to like different ways you can interact with it. Whereas Sleeping Dogs does like a lot more situational. And like it makes use of whether it's a quick tap or a hold. Like it takes a lot of notes from fighting games, I feel. But yeah, anyway, neither here nor there. Next one on the list, the last honorable mention, is Loof Rousers, which is another game I got recently and seems to be a game that is just like pick up, play a couple rounds of and set back down, and enjoy the heck out of that soundtrack. Also, another game that's just like initially, oh my god, how does this control?
I picked it up and I was launching it before we got into here and doing this evening, but I didn't really get any far to even fly, to be honest.
Basically, regardless of your orientation, going up on the control pad is forward thrust.
That's weird.
And then what? Left and right is to rotate your craft.
Oh, that's gonna throw me the
fuck. Yeah. So it basically you just need to eliminate from your mind the idea that it flies like a plane. And
can you change the controller scheme or at all?
There is an option to like change all of your controls. I would not recommend doing it because it is a unique way of like it's just a single line. That you make one edit at a time,
and so
it cycles through.
Would you also say that once you get it, it's pretty fluid? Once you understand it, it functions okay.
Yeah, I mean, like it's after getting the idea that it's not a plane, it's something else out of my head. I've been progressing through it, and I've been doing things like, okay, this can be the run where I only hang out in the sky, or this can be one where I'm only down low, and I've unlocked a couple things. I don't know how. I've only heard there's like 30 different things to unlock, but it's been a fun game. It's something I can for the next couple weeks/months. I'll be sitting down and just playing little bits of it while waiting for podcasts to finish, rendering or whatever.
Rendering that audio podcast.
Compiling the audio. I don't know.
It's compiling the audio,
and not forgetting parts to cut out.
Yep. Term yeah. That too. Checking editing notes. Anyway, but that is Loof Rousers. I could have sworn all of Lambeer's stuff, the people who make Loof Rousers, worked in Game Maker, but I don't think that game was made in Game Maker.
Is there any like call to BJ Blazkowicz on there?
No.
No, there's nothing, no Easter eggs or anything?
No.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. There's a history with that, but that I think is for another podcast. Official first one, like it's all the other games are games that I have. Completed they may not be fully complete games, but they're games that I've completed. It'll make sense. Transistor, really everything that can be said. I've put my piece in with when Shinboy talked about it. It's a good game. I enjoyed like the parts of it enough to put on the list.
Some would say it's the fifth best game of 2014.
Some would say that.
I had fun messing with the dog in that little rest area. I remember doing that.
I had fun messing with the skills system because it's great.
Yeah, and like the way they sort of they sort of Dark Souls it up of teasing out the lore, I kind of enjoyed.
Bit too far with it, though.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of hard to follow at times.
But just the idea of, like, oh, this initial piece of this story is, like, it is engaging enough. I want to learn more about it, so I'll actually equip this thing. I made that decision for a couple of things. Like, there was a pretty standard combo, like ability setup I wanted to run with, but I deviated with that a couple times to just, take in a bit of the lore in the story. But yeah, that's Transistor. Number six is Banner Saga, Part 1. Really, and this is like
pseudo spoiler. Oh, this is whatever spoilers. The part when you're running, like when you're Oregon trailing up the hill and suddenly the background is just breaking apart.
Yep. That part was great.
I was just like, engulfed
weird me. Space serpent shows up and you're like, what is this game? And then you get into combat and you're like, oh, this is this game.
Yeah, the combat, especially because I played so much of Banner Saga Factions, like it kind of let me down. I had more fun with factions, maybe just because I was playing against human opponents and they employed interesting strategies. But it was not enjoyable. It was enjoyable, but it was a one trick pony to an extent.
I don't think the combat is enjoyable.
Yeah,
it's even worse if you.
I think that the like you said, the Oregon Trail parts of that game are very much enjoyable. It's very good.
Yeah. And then that boss fight that they throw at you at the very end.
I haven't gotten that far because.
Basically, the game does a really good job of setting the tone of desperation and survival, almost annoyingly so. But yeah, the art style, there are so many parts about that game I did enjoy.
It's one of those things where, much like Titanfall, but in a very different way, I feel like the second one, which I think
was just
announced, the trailer either just came out yesterday or today for 2.
Yeah.
I think if they change how goddamn turns work, I will love that game.
See, maybe that's why. I thought it was just the iOS version that just controlled shitty, which it probably is, because that's the only way I've played that game so far. But I had a hard time understanding the turn order and things and the way
there
things
is none. Function.
That's there the you annoying go.
Part. Really,
there
it's, go. It's they want to go every other person,
which I think is a really, really terrible decision.
Yep. Well, I mean,
it's one of those things where it's like in most games of that ilk, your Final Fantasy Tactics, your Fire Emblems of the world, you're just like, this really powerful guy is going, next or going soon. I'm going to see if I can eliminate him before it's his turn. What happens in the Banner Saga is you do that, and another enemy just sort of slides into that place in the turn order, so you're always alternating. It's even if there's only one enemy left, you still get one move at a time, which I think is just terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes you make interesting decisions that do not make sense in a standard RPG, XCOM-esque battle situation. Mm-hmm. That is to say, basically you want to go to every person you can quickly and reduce them to 1 to 2 hit points, because they will stay in spot and make it so the high damaging, high defense characters attack less often, but you don't want to kill them because, yeah.
I think that type of system works best when you sort of have to, and we're getting into more RPG stuff here, but when you sort of have to weather the storm at the beginning and then sort of snowball and gradually dig your way out of it to win the fight. I think that 13th Age, the tabletop RPG, does that really well with the, what was it called? The die, the escalation die. That gives you an increase to each of your attack rolls for each round. So inherently at the beginning, you're at a disadvantage. And then as as the rounds go on, your team gets stronger and stronger and stronger to the point where at the end you sort of feel like you sort of came back and accomplished something, which I don't think you get that sense of satisfaction from the Banner Saga's combat.
Yeah, I'll agree to that, especially because at the end it's just a wet fart sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The high tense fighting has pretty much already, that was the start of the fight. Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a game I enjoyed. And again, this is not exactly a top 10 as much as a just like the 10 games that came out this year that I've played. I am usually a latecomer to playing games. Next up, number 5 is Jazz Punk. And that game is just
such a weird game.
The humor really worked for me. I really enjoyed
it. That game seems like something I can respect from a distance, but I'm not sure I want to play it.
Yeah.
I played it today, and I have mixed feelings about that game. So I guess that's exactly what you guys just said. So.
Basically, it is so hard to get to do humor well, especially in a video game. And like, not all of it stuck with me, but there are definitely parts that I was like, okay, yeah, that's, you got me.
For me, dialing the phone, and you're dialing the phone with what looks like a hand from Ren and Stimpy, and then all of a sudden you step back from the phone, and it magically appeared in your hand is like a little stick with a hand and arm on it.
You're just holding a stick the whole time. Yeah,
yeah, it's, I mean, that is actually pretty cool, and I do enjoy that a lot. But God, that game's weird and fun in some weird, awkward ways.
Yeah, so that's Jazz Punk. It's definitely, you know, just check out the quick look of it, and if you find some of the jokes, then give it a try. If not, then, you know, oh well. Number four, Neverending Nightmares. That game, it. I'm not a big fan of horror games, or at least, like, you know, that I wouldn't want to play Outlast. Like, the whole roller coaster jump scare wasn't for me, but I this past year I enjoyed watching The Spookin' with Scoops, and I had like an amateur interest of horror games, and so I picked it up. I liked the art style, and I thought it was neat. But then just playing through it and seeing all the ways the designer was trying to scare you under the hood of just like, oh, there's this tree in the background. It's kind of animating as if it's like two giant clawed hands trying to grab you. And just like seeing the different patterns underneath the, like the, in the background of the wallpaper, like all these little things happening, you know, that most players may not notice, but their subconscious would notice.
Yeah, the giant baby creeped me out.
The giant baby creeped you out. The arm creeped you out. The plural you. The tendon and the arm.
I must see. I think there's just something wrong with me because I saw nothing like disturbing or weird or scary or any uncomfortable. Like nothing
like
about that game.
I wouldn't say like disturbing or okay, the arm thing.
Steam screenshot with the thing being pulled out of the dude's arm. I'm sitting here with my arm in my lap, sort of curled up because that's really bothering me.
That's what I mean. Like that, I saw that like on the video on Speaking of Scoops, and I all right, and then it went back to him being in bed again. It's like okay, next.
Well, and especially because as a rock climber, like it's when after a good a big workout or a big day climbing, your blood veins, for me at least, stick out like that.
Yeah, no. Back when I did like weightlifting and stuff. So I mean, mine did the same things. But like I said, I'm not saying that there isn't something deeply disturbing about that. I'm saying there might be something wrong with me because I had found none of that disturbing.
No, it's not. It's okay. So, and when I will agree with you, Darren. When I look at it, it's not disturbing. I've seen far worse things on the internet, so I'm not really fazed by it. But the delivery of the giant baby was like. Okay, that my mind was like, that's not right. What's not right about that? Oh, okay. You know, but I had to have that thing. I actually had to think about it. Like normally, if I see some of the crap you see on the internet, you're just like, okay, yep, that's the internet. But seeing it in a game, and this is when I was watching it, I was kind of like, okay, what's wrong with this picture? And I had to think about it. Normally, I don't have to. So that's what I mean. Like it was kind of like disturbing in that way. I was like, why am I having to think about why this is weird? Is there something weirder? What's weird about it? Why am I thinking it's weird? So,
yeah, like for me, I don't know if disturbing is the right word as much as unsettling.
Maybe that's a better way. Yeah.
But and the other thing that this may happen with all sorts of horror games, but it felt like it dragged on for me. Like granted, the name is Neverending Nightmares. But then when I was finished and looked at the clock, I'd only been playing for an hour and a half, but it had felt like a lot more. Like it's like, okay, let's. Maybe that was just my brain wanting to, like, you know, end it and just be like, let's stop playing this. But yeah, that's number four for me. Number three is The Fall, Part One. Is that
the weird puzzle shooter game where you play as the spacesuit keeping the dude alive?
Yes.
Okay, that looks neat.
That looks neat, and especially for people who are on the fence about it, like, Part One stands on its own, complete as a story. Like there's definitely stuff at the end that are like obvious cliffhangers, but also just like if you were to think of it as like a book that you'd pick up and read, it would be a good just like thing at the end of like what. So yeah,
my one criticism is that the game kind of does a lousy job of marrying, like, telling an interesting story mixed with, like, you know, Limbo-esque. It's a 2D plane, and there's really cool stuff and, like, really well-designed graphics and all that. But then it goes from that to, like, really challenging, obscure puzzle game mechanics of, like, oh, you need to open this shaft, but in order to do that, you have to, like, make these plants spew a poison, but you have to make the plants poison, like, angry with you, so you have to go to this other area, and it's just, like, one thing after the other, and I had to look up a guide a couple times for the middle of that game. That being said, the story parts of it, especially if you are a fan of sci-fi or just the subject of, like, what it is to be human and or to be an AI, that wonderful game.
Blade Runner, if you will.
Yes.
I like Blade Runner.
I watched that this year. That is pretty good.
Blade Runner is really good.
Yep.
Number two might get shot down by the group, but it is Rogue Legacy, which came out on PS4 this year.
Sure, it's your list, man.
Okay.
Yep.
That was a game that I started playing in during Extra Life live stream, and man, does that game just really good roguelike-esque, and controls really well. And I'd known of this soundtrack beforehand. It's the same, the guy who does the sound for it is the same guy who does Smarter Every Day, or at least the first song you keep hearing as you go into the dungeon. The YouTube series, Smarter Every Day.
I like Smarter Every Day.
Yeah. I can't remember the group's, the guy's name is, he's Canadian. Anyway, but the game is just, it's really good. You should check it out, Rogue Legacy. It's pretty much available on everything now, except iOS yet. Sorry, Squiddle. Okay.
Boo!
No, just, you like playing games on iOS more than anything
else. I know, that's what I'm saying. Boo. I'm boo. Oh, I'm booing.
Okay. They're booing me. And number one is Dave Lang's Turnover.
Ah, yes. With Big Man on Campus Mode.
Yes. Also known as Roundabout. Again, spoilery. I almost don't want to spoil it, but the part where you go to the, like, Statue Island really hit me in the feels. I was not I was surprised, but at the same time not surprised that... okay, has anybody else played it or beaten it?
I have not.
Okay. Disco Sovan wants you to go to the statue... And it's a statue of Ryan Davis.
That's cool.
Yeah. I did not expect it. And I think because I didn't expect it, I had to, like, pause the game and just be like, okay, wow. I just went down memory lane sort of thing on that. And then just, like, the story is it's really dumb, really good. It's a video game just for dumb's sake. I think Dan Teasdale is just a pretty decent writer when it comes to making really dumb stuff like that. Like, I really enjoyed that. And
to give you a sense of his humor, before that game was out, he said he was working on the French translation and put in placeholder stuff. So instead of, like, is there a word like cyclone or something in there? If you, like, jump and do a spin in the air?
Yes.
What is the word that they use?
I don't remember.
I
do enjoy that I didn't
let's
really...
Say, hold on, let's okay. just say it's like spin, right?
Yeah.
Like you just jump in the air and spin. It just says spin, like big letters on screen. His idea for a placeholder French translation, which he said he was considering keeping, was just changing it to less spin.
All right.
So that gives you the idea of his sense of humor.
I think so many ways I was tangentially related to this game and didn't even realize it. Like I'd been following... this guy on YouTube, just like a series of a guy doing an XCOM playthrough. I did not realize that that is that guy's brother, Dan Teasdale's.
Okay.
And he's the guy who did all the sound for the game. I was like, wait, what? And again, the chauffeur is former Arena developer. And like,
correct.
Yeah. Everything about that game is really good, especially the part where it's the entire game is a two-camera shoot until they bring in a third camera reveal at the very end.
Oh, man.
It was amazing. It's a game changer. It's a really dumb game.
Where would you even put the third camera?
It was,
I could think of many places.
It was an out-of-limo shot.
Oh man, game changer, yes, indeed.
Indeed. That's. I feel like I'm going to write that actually down. Really, I spoiled the game as well.
It's third actually like a really funny, shot. Like very subtle, but actually really major twist.
Yep. And then on top of that, like the game is actually it's pretty good when it comes to just like looking at it from afar. And other people have said this. It looks like, okay, weird, I guess. But then once you actually sit down, grab the controller or grab the mouse and keyboard, it plays decent on both. It's pretty good. It's pretty challenging. I think the game's speed run record is like 10 or 11 minutes, and it took me a good like 2 hours. So yeah, try it out. It's fun. Silly.
It's a cool, dumb thing made by a cool, dumb dude.
Yes. I hope that it was successful enough for him to do something else, because I would love to see their next dumb thing. But yeah, those are 10 games, well, 11 games that I played this year that I enjoyed.
Now we have a list.
We have a list
of, I think it's actually 11 things between the three of us, because there's one overlapping.
Real quickly, though, Third gave some honorable mentions, so I want to also give a quick honorable mention to the as somebody else put in here, the real game of the year. And that was Mount Your Friends. The game's fucking great.
2014's best game of 2013 is Mount Your Friends.
Hey guys,
I don't want to say what Mount Your Friends is. I just want people to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Go play it.
At PAX, can I mount you guys?
Only if I mount a goat first.
Okay.
Fair and enough. Only if you go to PAX Prime and somehow let me know when tickets are available for PAX Prime the day of, so I can buy one as well.
I mean, you don't want to make the trek down to PAX South like Durin?
No. Can't afford it this year. Moving on. If you want to take a quick break, forget it. Let's just move on.
Hold on. I need to put these in alphabetical order. Again. All right,
we're going to take a quick break.
Yeah.
Using real, actual editing magic. Done.
Break.
All right. We're back. And break. Okay, and we're back.
Hold on. Penises. I thought we were actually taking a break.
You sent me mixed messages. Actually taking a break.
I was going to go use the bathroom.
Go.
You're like, we're back. I'm like, oh, God.
Hello everyone, it's Thurb here, post-editing. I just wanted to give a little bit of heads up that for the final fight, I guess if you will, of 2014 to see which three games takes the throne, I may or may not have added some Luftrausers music in the background, and in no way was an accident of me playing it through the same audio channel that I was using to record. So, enjoy. Please consider purchasing if you like the music on their Bandcamp page. And let's get on with the podcast.
And we're back. We're going to just narrow down. Yay.
Hey, guys. Hey.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
By the way, I didn't know what B – is it B-E-A or B-A-E? Whatever this trending, yeah. Like, what the fuck was that? I don't know what that was.
Was it short for baby?
No, there was like boo. I remember boo, and boo was stupid.
Bay? It's like short for baby, except it's just bay.
Next, it's just going to be buh. Is that what we're going to get to? Just buh. Hey, what's a buh?
I mean, yeah, we're eventually just going to devolve back into like caveman grunts.
That sounds okay.
God, oh, I hate the world sometimes. Okay. I'm done with my rant. I'm good.
Okay. We have Shinboy has collected the top three of everyone's category.
The painstaking task of copy-pasting like 11 things.
Yep. And we are going to discuss to see which one, which should be the top three voted and decided by committee for the Scotch cast.
Not by you, the listener.
I think it'd be interesting if we did like a RNG, this top. Top
random dog word. Yep, random.org. Yep, good idea. Yeah. Oop, that's a terrible idea.
All right.
Okay, so I guess since I was the one who took it upon myself to spend 30 seconds copy-pasting.
Hold on.
I will read the list.
There we go.
Okay. Where did the list go? I don't see it anymore.
It's on a top three sheet on this Google Doc.
Oh, you moved it. Okay.
I didn't move it. Third moved it.
Yes, okay. I moved it.
Okay. Alphabetically, so no really particular order outside of the arbitrary way we decided to order letters. Bayonetta 2, Divinity Original Sin, Endless Legend. Huh. My three are actually the first three alphabetical. That's funny. Far Cry 4. Middle Earth, Shadow of Mordor. That one's on there twice, but there's only one entry. That's why we got to 11 and not 12. Rogue Legacy. South Park, The Stick of Truth. The Fall. Dave Lang's Turnover, a.k.a. Roundabout. World of Warcraft, Warlords of Draenor. And Wolfenstein, The New Order. What are we cutting first?
Do we want to just go around each person propose a cut?
Yep.
Okay, sure. So we that way.
Just this leaves this first round. Jimboy, I guess you want to start off?
I'll cut Rogue Legacy because it's the least this year of these games.
That's the one. Looking at the list is like, okay, which one am I willing to, like, you know, not shed blood over? And yeah, all right.
Cross it out. It has been crossed.
Oh.
It's been voted off the island by the tribe.
It has.
So a bit of an aside, I didn't realize that John Rocker, if anyone doesn't know who John Rocker is, he was the crazy, kind of racist pitcher who used to pitch for the Atlanta Braves. And I've always been fascinated by him and how he has been a public figure. And I didn't realize he was on Survivor. So now I need to find those episodes. Anyway, moving on.
About as random as you can get. All right.
Dern, you want to...
I am going to take the opportunity to not allow any of you the pleasure of doing this. So I am going to go ahead and cut Warlords of Draenor.
You're just
going
to commit seppuku?
I am, because I was talking about this during the break, and I know there's no way in hell that thing is surviving this list, not with this group, so it's gone.
Yeah, I have no problems with WoW. Just none of us play it, except for you.
Speaking of seppuku, at work, this guy made a mistake. It was a minor mistake at work.
And he committed seppuku? Oh, God.
I have this trim that we use for cables on the wall to kind of hide the cables and make it look nice and pretty on the wall. And I put a little disc from a hard drive on the end of it with some tape around it so it looks like a samurai sword. And so I told him he made a mistake. I said, I stood up out of nowhere. I was being quiet. I said, nope, you fucked up. Pulled the sword out. I said, seppuku now. In the middle of the floor.
I mean, did he listen?
He grabbed the sword. But that was about it.
As in, are you now hiring for that position?
Man, you guys threw dark over there. Jeez.
Well, you know. So anyway.
Speaking of throwing dark, Squiddle, do you want to cut another game from the list?
Going from throwing dark, do you want to throw shade, as the kids say, at one game on this list?
Wait, shade? What?
Throwing shade is a phrase that is used by the youngins.
No. No. No.
By the youths?
Okay. I am going to say... I guess we'll just...
Yeah, it's like already getting kind of hard.
Man, I don't know. I can't think. I guess we'll go with this Turnover. No, I don't know because I didn't play the game, so that's hard for me to say that.
That's the thing. Like, if you want to cut it, like somebody can try and defend
it. But, okay, yeah. So let's just say. Okay, I'll say Turnover. Let's just.
A blank Turnover. The real name is
Yeah.
Squiddle. Okay. Yeah. It has a fart mode where every sound is replaced with farts.
God damn it, you know my weakness.
Ah, but South Park also has farts, and I would argue that is the better.
South Park has fart magic.
And swinging testicles, so I'm still going to hold with Roundabout.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Fart magic.
Like I don't want to just like say an impassioned speech that is more or less the same thing I said not like 10 minutes ago. It's a really good game though, especially like considering the price difference between some of these heavy hitters that are more than likely going to take the crown. It's a good game for cheap. It's really dumb. That's all I'm gonna say.
Okay.
Looking at the list. Hmm.
Son of a bitch.
I'm going to go with Far Cry 4.
God damn it. No, I'm
okay with that because that's Far Cry 3.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's
it's more of the same game.
It is more the same game, which, I mean, like, Far Cry 3 is amazing.
Yeah.
But guys, we have Pagan. I mean, come on.
We do have Pagan.
The second underutilized villain in the last two Far Cry games.
They did a great job of improving it, and, like, one would expect that would keep it on the list. However, when it comes to open world, sneak about, stab about, shoot about, shoot arrows, shoot games, you see where I'm going with this. I think Shadow of Mordor does a better job, and if we want, I don't want a top three to be two similar games and then a third, you know, stand about.
All right, I can agree to that because
also
that would be
like
great for the...
Far Cry 4 is sort of the epitome of like a solid game that doesn't change much, while like Shadow of Mordor took a big risk with that Nemesis system that could not work at all.
Far Cry basically is a solid sequel that they can never do again.
I would argue that like Far Cry is the safest game on this list, even out of the ones that were already eliminated.
What if Far Cry 5 had the
Has at the very end, you wake up and get out of the Animus and like look over to the next guy and like, man, that was
like,
crazy.
Like, seriously, like if Far Cry 5 basically is the same gameplay again with a different setting and a different enemy.
It has a Nemesis system this time because they're gonna lease the Nemesis system concept and put it in there. It's gonna be great, guys. I know it's gonna be great.
If it has something like that would be cool because that's kind of what I'm worried about. Is Far Cry 4 like that gameplay is fun? And I look forward to playing it again in that game. Okay. But after that game, I never want to play that same game again. Like, Far Cry 5 needs to be a larger departure to remain interesting.
Also, one aside, and it does a really good job compared to other games not on this list. But of the games on this list, I think Far Cry 4 was the most buggy upon release.
Divinity had some weird bugs.
And Draenor did get DDoS'd,
but it wasn't buggy. Like that the game itself released fine. They just
And Endless Legend had some weird bugs.
Like you said, Divinity was a little weird at launch too.
And Endless Legend didn't have a lot of bugs, it just had a lot of things that would cause crashes. Which I've since been on it now.
I will concede to Far Cry 4 because I know that Just Cause 3 will win Game of the Year next year.
Just Cause 3.
Do you want to be the one to shade it out?
I'll do it
on our list. Yeah.
I don't know if we each want to go in an order anymore. Like, I kind of feel like we should just sort of collectively come to a decision when we are now because there are four games left that we need to cut.
Yeah, we've been around. Yeah. Okay.
Alright. So let's remove the ones that lost and then we just.
I'm just going to copy this list elsewhere just so we have it for reference, and then I'm just going to delete the ones that are grayed out. Clacky clacky keyboard time.
All right.
And reorder these sort range. Okay.
Oh.
All right. We have Bayonetta, Divinity, Endless Legend, Middle-earth, South Park, The Fall, and Wolfenstein. What do you guys think of The Fall?
I would say we should maybe at this point kind of follow the Jive Bomb method of doing this, and maybe what do we think is like a lock for top three?
I feel like
Middle Earth is like that's gonna
you're
be
right.
Top three, right.
We should see what is a lock for top three out of top three.
Out of these, like, what is the seven we have here?
Yeah,
like, are there any that we know we can go ahead and like safely it will be
like
top
even
three, like,
even though I haven't played Middle Earth, like I could see that making top three.
I'll agree to it being top three, despite me not liking the way it controls. I realize I'm crazy, and that is it's a runaway success. It does a really lot of like neat, cool things, and I hope that other games can like take the same idea of a really neat programming system.
It's one of those things where like it's this people seem to like it for the same reason I like Endless Legend and Divinity. It's sort of like brought a breath of fresh air to sort of stale genre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So I think that justifies its spot.
Well, I mean, if we think about stale genres, I guess you're right. I'm trying to think because I'm trying to argue that Wolfenstein, but the last Wolfenstein game was decent. It wasn't horrible, but they've had some pretty. Yeah. Okay.
But like the first person shooter has had some interesting things happen over the years, whereas like the third person character action game, by the closest to like innovation we've seen is like.
Climbing towers.
Well, no, I was gonna say like Bayonetta, but that's basically Devil May Cry. So, nah.
Even then, it's not just like four gameplay changes. It's like overarching system changes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the way they handle death in the game is different than, like, as dear as I can tell, any other game.
Yeah.
Like, roguelikes, well, they have a twist on it.
The changes made in Shadow of Mordor, or the systems implemented in Shadow of Mordor, I feel like are kind of akin to the systems that were implemented that changed the way first-person shooters went after Call of Duty 4. Or at least has the potential to do that.
We'll see. Yeah.
Okay, so we're locking in Middle Earth. Is that where we're at, right?
I'm okay with that. Dern? Lock in?
That was my top game.
Squiddle, lock and load?
Yeah, we'll lock it.
Shinboy?
I'm okay with that.
All right.
I haven't played it. I can respect that game.
Now, and hear me out here.
Mm-hmm.
Bayonetta 2.
Mm-hmm.
That is a game that came out this year.
It is a game that came out here this year. It's probably the most game that came out this year.
I don't know. Endless Legend is a game-ass game. There are system upon systems. Game throws numbers at you like no other.
Right, however, you stated that Bayonetta didn't care that it was a
Bayonetta
game.
Bayonetta does not give a shit that it is a video game.
So does that, that carefree, devil may care, I will say attitude towards it, I mean, does that lock it in, do you think? Does that really...
I don't know if it locks it in. Because I did not have it.
I guess, is there any other list on this? Is there any other game on this list that anyone feels is like a shoe-in for top three?
I will fight you all to the death to get Divinity into that top three.
let me put it this way. I see Divinity, Endless, and South Park both encompassed in what you could consider a, like, you know, RPG strategy sort of thing. And of those three, Divinity being the leader. In the same way, like Middle Earth compared to Far Cry.
Yeah.
So I think Divinity is going to take that. We can boot Endless and South Park, and then it's just.
I don't know, man. South Park is a really fucking good RPG.
It does not play well.
Like just
it's
because
not, it's
just
not
because
your standard
South
RPG.
Park does not make it like you can't immediately discount it as being, like, simple.
No. It is a good, well written game. It is not a good RPG.
It is a great RPG.
It is a fun game, sure, but in terms of, like, what is the best RPG, what is the best role-playing game on this list, it's Divinity.
System-wise.
They're completely different kinds of RPGs, though. Like, that's...
One is a true RPG, and another one has RPG elements.
That's
the thing. Like, this would be like comparing Baldur's Gate to, you know, Final Fantasy X. They just don't compare. They're both RPGs, but they use wildly different systems.
I'm just saying, if you're looking which one of these two games is an RPG-ass RPG, it's Divinity.
Well, just because it's an RPG-ass RPG does not make it a better game, or even a better RPG.
I mean, I think it does make it a better game, because, I mean, well, not that it automatically makes it a better game. I think that Divinity is the better playing game. I don't like the combat in South Park.
But, okay, Dirt, what I was going to say, if you look at those three as RPGs, that then leaves...
Well, Endless Legend is not really an RPG, it's a strategy game.
Yeah, okay.
You wouldn't call Civ an RPG.
Right.
Fair.
Okay.
But do you think Bayonetta could hold its own against the Fallen Wolfenstein?
Yes.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that even without playing Bayonetta.
Wolfenstein, I would also argue, was a game that does not give a shit that it's a video game.
It is.
The Nazis took over the moon, you guys. Fuck the moon.
But I mean, why would you bother with the Nazis taking over the moon when you can pick up a boss and throw him into the moon?
Yeah.
So, I'm just going to throw this out here. At the end of Bayonetta 2, the very last thing you do with the controller is, like, you know how in, like, Bayonetta there's gigatons and megatons and all that where you mash buttons to get extra points?
Yes.
The last thing in Bayonetta 2, which is the only time I saw it in the whole game, is infinitons. And then... It says, like, limit break reached, maximum bonus overload, or something like that, and then everything explodes.
Oh my god.
Putting this out there.
Okay, let's...
Proposing.
Okay.
In no particular order. Middle-Earth, Divinity, Bayonetta 2.
I'm okay with that.
Durin? Coming back to Durin in a second. Squiddle?
I have a hard time not having Wolfenstein on this list. I really do. And the only reason is...
What do you see going off the list and having Wolfenstein go on?
I don't know, because I agree where... I really do think that Divinity needs to be on there. I enjoyed it. I think it's a great concept. And that's where I'm hard, because I know Bayonetta is a great freaking game, but I haven't played it yet. However, I'm biased because I've played Wolfenstein, and I am drawn to it because I've played it.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. Like, as somebody who has played some of both of those games, more Wolfenstein than Bayonetta, Wolfenstein is a good game, partly because it's such a surprise that it's a good game. They did some interesting stuff with, like, the characters and the story. The shooting feels good. It feels serviceable. But it doesn't even come close to standing up against a game like Bayonetta.
Okay. All right, well,
like, fun factor, which is kind of what both those games go for.
I'll say it got this far, so I'm happy with that. So that's fine, I guess. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I'm really tied to that character in the storyline, but I probably would be the same way with Bayonetta if I had played it. So,
seeing the storyline is not the reason you go into Bayonetta.
No.
Is the ridiculousness that is set up because of the storyline?
That's like going to X-Blades for character depth.
It's like, okay, so. You know how right at the beginning of Bayonetta, Jean gets her soul separated from her body? Mm-hmm. Right? There are parts in that game where you level start. It's like, oh, I guess I'm in hell now. I need to go rescue Jean.
Wow. I really want to play Bayonetta. All right, I will... What was the given order or the...
There was no order. It was just the proposed three was Middle Earth, Divinity, and Bayonetta. And Durin, I did get back to Durin, but Squiddle, you seemed okay with that. I mean, you don't seem okay with that, but as voted by committee, as decided by committee.
Yeah, I guess I will concede.
Durin?
I
Or are you willing to take down Bayonetta 2 to put up South Park Stick of Truth?
Can we have a latecomer come in to this at all?
No. Is Roundabout about to turn this whole thing around?
I could always pull the Crossy Road card and say that's a pretty awesome game. I've been playing it for a bit and it's like 6,000 coins in.
All right, so how does this sound? Middle Earth, Bayonetta 2, WWE Supercard.
Oh, yes.
No. Middle Earth, Divinity, WWE Supercard.
Oh, even better.
See, now I'm kind of mulling over Thurb's proposition of South Park and Bayonetta 2.
No, I don't think South Park is worthy of a top 3 spot. As much as I like the writing in that game, as much as I think it's fantastic, they absolutely nailed the art style. I don't think the game plays well enough to justify
a top 3 spot. How far did you get into the game?
Until I realized I didn't want to play it anymore.
Well, yeah, for you sometimes that's like 10 minutes into a game.
It was like hour and a half.
Oh geez.
Oh, see, I played South Park for probably about 5-6 hours.
See, that's kind of the problem I think that you might have had with that game too. Aside from you not liking the combat, is that the game picks up when the whole conflict between the humans and the elves doesn't matter anymore.
Again, but the thing is, that may all be true. That doesn't mean I want to put it in the top 3 of the year. Can make the same argument for you and not getting far in Divinity. It works both ways.
Yes. Black Bay Asylum. That's exactly what I was thinking. Well, Middle Earth, Black Bay Asylum, and WWE Supercard. God, this is...
What is Black Bay Asylum? I don't remember.
It's not a good game.
Bad Rats?
Not a good game.
Apparently, somebody was telling me recently that Bad Rats sold so many copies on Steam because of people being dumb and buying them for people that they're now working on a sequel.
Yeah, because it was like 19 cents during the Steam sales. People would buy like 20 copies and just gift them to people.
Hey, I remember a game I gifted to you, Shen, that was...
No, let's not discuss
that. Let's not get... Let's focus on hand. Shinboy, I don't see Endless Legend or The Fall...
I'm perfectly fine with Endless Legend not making
it. Taking them off the current list.
I said my piece about Endless Legend.
Yep, same here. I'm just super excited for the fall too. I think when that game is finished, I could probably reapproach, and like the whole idea is like this is as a complete thing, amazing, hopefully. Can we put Divinity on?
I will concede Divinity over South Park, only with the caveat that Divinity is not a better RPG than South Park. It has more interesting systems than South Park.
I think in terms of you playing a character, I think it is a better role-playing game.
I don't know, man. You didn't get to the dress-up part in South Park.
Crazy and the whole game in Divinity is the dress-up part.
You as a boy get to go see the girls' meetings.
So there was one part when I was listening in on Lupia and Albano's playthrough where Albano tried to sell Lupia into slavery because he, in the mindset of his character, thought it was what he truly wanted and would be better for him in life.
Okay, you know what? I decided, alright, here's my decision between those two games. Divinity will trump South Park if only because all decisions are made with rock, paper, scissors.
Yes.
As they should be in real life.
Yep.
Okay. Yep.
Rock, paper, scissors fight decided whether or not he was sold into slavery.
That was that was really fun when I did that. I was like,
were deciding whether or not to kill those drunk guards.
Oh man, I actually just started that new game not too long ago, and I totally did not want to kill them, but my fucking NPC partner did, and we got into rock, paper, scissors, and she won, and we killed them, and I felt terrible.
See, when I played through that game solo, I set no AI on the personality, so I just did all the things like I wanted.
Barbie Dreamhouse Park.
For this audio podcast, we have this real list going. Barbie Dreamhouse Party, WWE Supercard, Black Bay Asylum. I don't see Mount Your Friends on that list.
Again, that came out last year. Like 2013.
So did Rogue Legacy, and it made it onto the initial list.
That was available on PS4.
Not Your Friends came out this year on Steam.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Okay.
There you go. Not Your Friends, game of the year 2014.
So, there you go.
So the top three is four games.
So now if we're moving Divinity over, I've won my battle. I'm happy. I can die in peace. It's like the Cubs just won the World Series. I can die in peace. Okay.
Here.
So now we have Bayonetta 2, South Park, Stick of Truth, Wolfenstein, The New Order. We need one game out of those three. I would pick Bayonetta personally.
Okay.
I'm going back and forth on them because the hard part I'm having is I played all the way through South Park. I played about 2 hours of Bayonetta.
I played all the way through Bayonetta and played about 2 hours of South Park.
Yeah, so I'm trying to be as fair as I can to with both games because I want to favor South Park because I've seen the story all the way through. But
Bayonetta 2 is really fucking good.
It is. South Park, you do get to perform multiple abortions.
I'm sure that's positive.
You also shrink down and go into a gay sex slave's asshole and come out his mouth.
Again, not sure that's a positive.
You take down the government in Taco Bell.
In Bayonetta 2, you get on top of a broken piece of building and surf upwards on the outside of a water spout.
Okay, how's this? Okay, is anyone against me talking about the end of South Park?
I am, because I just started it.
I mean, if you want to talk about taking down governments, that's all Wolfenstein is.
It very well could, be a deciding factor on this game. Fuck. Yeah, but you've already said you don't like the combat. Are you actually going to play it?
I mean, probably. I'll just suffer through because it's not very long.
Yeah, it's about, 10 hours? Something like that. 15 hours? 12 hours?
I mean, ideally, most people aren't drawn to the Stick of Truth because of the combat. They're drawn to it because of the writing, because of,
which is why I'm going to continue playing it.
Yeah, I mean, the combat I think it's totally fine.
I would say that we already have, and you're going to hate me for this, we already had Divinity on the list, But if we're looking at an RPG, then if we're looking for gameplay, then South Park is funny as hell.
They could not be more different games between
South Park. No, I get.
Yeah,
I'm saying that's why it's hard to pick.
Okay,
because they're good for very, very different reasons.
Definitely.
Should we look at replay value?
Not really, because both kind of replayable.
Yeah, I would argue that Bayonetta is more so, simply because there's no way you can unlock everything on the first play. And that genre is inherently very replayable. It's made to be played multiple times.
But, I mean, at the same time, like South Park, when you beat it after the credits are over, it drops you back into the world again, and you can keep going. There are other side missions that you can complete. You could also just start over and you could play. It's replayable. If there are multiple classes you can play as.
It seems like, though, that game is a lot of the gags. Like, once you've seen them, you've seen them.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I don't think replayability is necessarily the most important factor, but I would argue that Bayonetta is the more replayable. Not that that really means anything in this context.
That ending to South Park, though.
Ending to Bayonetta, though.
I'd also say, like, Wolfenstein does a really good job of, like, it is a good game. Granted, it's done by, like, a really good team that is effectively the Riddick team. It's effectively Wolfenstein Riddick game.
It's the team that did Riddick?
Yeah.
Actually the team that did Riddick, or is it just the studio?
It's the studio. I don't know if it's the same team. I haven't checked the credits of both.
Yeah, because Starbreeze isn't the same Starbreeze anymore.
Yeah, fair.
Okay, well, however, how about this dumb gameplay twist?
Okay.
At the end of Bayonetta, you need to...
Now, if you're going to talk about the end of Bayonetta, then I'm going to talk about the end of South Park.
Just mechanics, not story.
Okay.
You know how in, like, most games you get, like, the rectangle of the screen and you're on, like, a ship or something and you need to, like, you know, move the ship around, like, the plane of the screen, kind of like Star Fox, you know what I'm talking about? Move the dude around the screen within the borders of the screen. You need to, after you beat the final boss, you need to do that with the final boss to guide him into a giant dragon demon's mouth so he can eat it. It's pretty dumb.
That's pretty dumb. But of the three, the game that, like, took the most risks versus reward and did a really good job executing it is Wolfenstein. I'm not saying it, like, you know, same thing as replayability.
I would say South Park did.
I would argue South Park.
I mean, they took a licensed product and put a very well-known, like, old-school RPG studio behind making a light RPG South Park game.
And then that game got caught in development hell, and Ubisoft took a giant risk picking it up, and it turned out good.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say the biggest risk is actually definitely going to be South Park. Like, Wolfenstein, they managed to make a good story out of a Wolfenstein game.
I mean, I'll say, like, yes, it is insane that it survived that whole process of development, but I think, like, the quality of the game is directly a result of what, like, Trey Parker and Matt Stone wanted. Like, I imagine that's the thing they, you know, wanted to make. I don't know.
This
is tough, especially since I haven't played any of these.
South Park had a direction because it had from the creators and it knew where it was going to go. You know,
that doesn't make it any less good. That's like judging it, like holding that against it is silly.
Well,
but see, that's the thing. Like Wolfenstein,
my reasoning behind it is
it's a different direction because they had to, because the last game went so batshit crazy that they could possibly keep following with that narrative.
Okay.
Well, I mean, and also it's tough to do the same stuff, like the same style. It's tough to do a South Park episode in a video game, because that is something that is designed for, like, that is a television product, like,
especially like a 10-hour South Park episode.
Yeah, all of us can say, like, it's a bad idea to put, like, cutscene bars on, like, you know, the top and bottom of the screen, because video games are not movies, no matter how much that, like, designers and game developers want to design like a movie.
And that's the thing, is like with that game, like they do a good job of balancing, like enough gameplay in there, but also still having, you know, obviously the narrative of the show kind of carrying you along the way. Like, they very easily could have turned it into a Xenosaga where it's, you know, 2 minutes of gameplay, 20 minutes of cutscene. And they don't do that. Yeah. But they don't do that. They actually do a good job of giving you lots and lots of actual gameplay, story happening while your gameplay is going on, and then kind of rewarding you here and there with, you know, longer bits, you know, minute or two bits of, like, you know, show-style cutscenes. And, of course, the aesthetic of the game, you know, helps immensely with that, because there isn't this weird, you know, hard cut. It all looks exactly the same.
Yeah, which I think is impressive.
You know,
I still don't think it plays that well.
We're going to try something just because I'm not sure who is leaning in towards what, but I just want to go around to see who, like, what game each person is rooting for, and we'll see if something comes out of that. Shinboy, which of the three do you want to see on the list?
Bayonetta.
Okay.
With second being South Park and Wolfenstein not even being considered.
Durin.
I'm leaning towards South Park. Bayonetta will be second. Wolfenstein not considered.
Okay. Squiddle.
I fucking hate you guys.
I am playing through Wolfenstein. It is a great game. I don't even remember. How high was it on my list?
I mean,
yeah, it was my number four.
If we're looking at, you know, going on what I know from my gameplay, I would have to say Wolfenstein, South Park, Bayonetta. It just based on me playing and knowing anything about the games. So, let's just look at it. Wolfenstein's making a cut. Okay, let's just say that. I am going to take the dual machine guns, put them to my temples in some weird way with my arms stretched out further than a normal human being, and pull the trigger, blowing my fucking head off at this. So, let's just cut Wolfenstein.
Fuck the dual machine guns, man. Dual shotguns is the best thing that game has.
Oh,
hey, Squiddle.
Yeah.
One of your top three is actually on the list. Shut the hell up.
Maybe.
I say it's between Bayonetta
and South Park. As somebody who didn't play any of these third, where are you? Where do you think you're sitting based on the arguments you've heard?
I mean, like, it's really tough to compare which one is better because, I mean, like, they are all video games, but they all do something so completely different. I mean, like, Bayonetta 2 does a really good job of telling this bombastic experience, not exactly a story, but just the set pieces and all that, and it can be super challenging like a fighting game, but does a really neat way of just making effectively an easy mode without having to change a setting. All you do is just dodge your way through.
I am generally really bad at those games. Bayonetta 2 is not challenging like a fighting game. Bayonetta 2 is actually really easy. I'm playing on difficulty. I'm playing on normal difficulty, and I'm getting silver or gold on everything.
Not later on.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you can make that game super hard if you want to. South Park is really good, but it's also kind of a one-trick pony. I mean, like, one of the jokes with all the, you know, people, all the YouTubers who made videos of that is it's really just them laughing at all the same jokes. Yes, it's a great game to play, but
I wouldn't say it's a one-trick pony. Like, it's a really good South Park story. You can't really call that a one-trick pony.
I mean, like, it's not a repeatable pony.
But still, you can't really hold that against it. Like, the fact that everyone's laughing at the same parts means that those parts are well-written and funny.
Yeah, I mean, by that same token, you know, Middle Earth is probably not super replayable either. If you go through and you do everything the first time around, you don't have anything else to do. You're kind of done with the game.
True, but we're looking at Middle Earth has the Nemesis system. Yeah,
I mean, taking Middle Earth really down, and we're putting D4 with Kinect support on in the list.
Nope, because Swery makes bad games.
Yes, but it's a part you can just it's designed where you just yell at the Kinect.
I'm saying like you can't necessarily immediately negate a game just because it doesn't have, you know, super high replay value.
I'm trying to wager the goods and the bads for each one. So I was going to then follow up and say, but it is so well written.
I have an idea.
So many dumb things.
I have an idea.
Are we throwing this in a randomizer?
No. Even better. We are defaulting to the original way of deciding between two items, between two people.
Hold on. Durin did say that the best way to settle anything
exactly
in life
rock paper scissors. So I think we need to in some way have Shin and Durin.
Do we need to turn
rock, paper, scissors?
Rock, paper, scissors?
Is there like an online rock, paper, scissors? Let's take a break. We're trying to figure this out.
I just realized the best rock, paper, scissors.
Just load up a Divinity co-op game.
No. Rock, paper, scissors has been provided to us by Dave Lang.
What?
A one-on-one match of dive kick.
A game of dive kick?
No, that's no fun. That's not random enough.
Now, do we do rock, paper, scissors, or do we do rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock?
No, because the Big Bang Theory is a crime against television.
Oh, you're a horrible person.
I could do a 3-hour podcast about how much I hate that show. It runs deep.
I mean, why are you looking for not, like, you have a camera, don't you?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know where the cable is. Yeah, hold on. I say we take a break while we figure this out.
We'll be right back after we settle this.
The only way it can be. God damn it, you got Divinity on there. You should have been happy with that.
Nope.
Change my mind about Divinity.
All right, coming back in 5.
Hold on. Durin, let's strike a deal. Strike a deal with the devil here. I'll allow South Park if we take out Middle Earth.
Nope.
Oh, damn.
I'm not a crazy person.
Okay.
I just had a flashback of me trying to wager with you to get Last of Us off for Gunpoint or something on top.
Yeah. Gunpoint was on the list last year. Gunpoint
For top place.
In no universe is South Park better than Middle Earth, and I really like South Park. But I am not insane.
Just because I have not played Middle Earth and I have played South Park, so.
What if they made a game based off the Lord of the Rings episode from South Park?
All right, I'm gonna say we're back now only because I'm going to add in that that deal with the devil. Nice try.
Oh, okay.
So that's sort of the edit.
Off screen.
Yes.
Durin can attest to this. He lost fair and square in best 2 out of 3 rock, paper, scissors.
He was a man of honor.
I still think we should play die kick, but yeah.
You only say that because you lost.
Maybe.
So with my selection. I picked South Park. No, just kidding. it's like all of this was for naught. I just wanted to argue.
It's a turn heel. Or a heel turn.
It's a turn heel. I'm copy-pasting Bayonetta 2 myself to get the satisfaction of doing it. Okay, so now we need to put these in order.
I thought they were. Okay.
No, that was just the order that we put them in there.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
I mean, I'm okay with that order.
Middle-earth, Divinity... Bayonetta?
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that.
Right? I know Durin's not, but...
Okay, hang on a second. I gotta fix something. Hang on.
All right, what if Bayonetta over Middle Earth? Would that happen?
Oh, I see what he's doing.
Let's not be crazy here.
Yep.
I mean...
Okay, there we go. Now that the Google Doc is fixed with the clocky keyboard action.
Okay, this is great for audio podcast, even though we've been constantly changing around honorable mentions.
Just know that WWE Supercard has been typed more than once onto this Google Doc.
Oh, that's great.
Where's the desert golfing love, you guys?
You know, next year, I will be doing two lists next year. I will do a mobile gaming list and a PC gaming list. Completely separate, because I think where mobile gaming has gotten to, you have to have two lists at this
point. I disagree. It's just a platform just like any other. I think that's the biggest compliment you can give it, is that it is a platform like any other.
Okay.
So unless anyone has any arguments, I think that's actually a decent order for that list, honestly.
Okay, not your friends.
Not your friends.
Yeah, sorry. our top three candidates are in this order. Mount Your Friends as number one. Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor as number two. Divinity Original Sin as number three. And honorable mention to Bayonetta 2.
That means that in all real talkness, it is Middle Earth at number one, Divinity at number two, Bayonetta at number three. And the only reason that Mount Your Friends does not have a number is that there's an infinity sign next to it, which means that it is game of the year all years.
Yes.
So basically, everyone else is just first, second, and third runners up to Mount Your Friends.
Yeah, everyone. I mean, basically, what we're saying here is Middle Earth is the first loser.
Yes. My friends.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
So congratulations to Might Your Friends and Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor as the best game of all time and the best game of the year.
Yes.
All right. And I think that is more or less where we've made a decision. And
we're making our way. Too late to change it now?
No. It's written in electronic stone. And again, it's honorable mention. Why does Wolfenstein be the one that keeps getting changed, but whatever.
Because it got eliminated before South Park, so South Park is technically the first honorable mention if we're doing it that way.
Yeah, I just want to give Wolfenstein... They're both honorable mentions. It doesn't... Nobody cares about fourth place.
Hey, guys. I just want to say it.
Vigigames. I'd say that'd be a great time to end it, but we have one last surprise to finish off 2014 and bring us into the ready for 2015. And I don't even know what that is, but Squiddle does.
I do, yes. I thought it would be apropos for...
Lead us home.
Middle Earth winning
top choice. Quick music plug. Thurb's music plug. Lou Frazzers.
Oh, yes.
Time to get one in.
I hear it was good.
Also... Apparently, reviews are starting to go out like on Blabbermouth.net for the new Blind Guardian album, which is dropping at the end of this month.
Woohoo! I'm excited.
All right, Squiddle, take us home.
So, yeah, so with Middle Earth winning top choice amongst this craziness, of course, nobody can ever outdo Might Your Friends. I have a verse from a song that you may know, and so I will sing it to sing us home for this year.
I have a guess of what it is. I hope it's something related to those films.
It is.
Something very specific, perhaps from the credits of the first of the three films.
It is.
Oh, I love this song.
I'm not going to do all of it because I can't, but I'm going to do the first part. You guys ready?
Yep. All right, let's do this.
May it be an evening star shines down upon you. May it be when darkness falls, your heart will be true. You walk a lonely road, oh how far you are from home. Peace out, 2014.